Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I think Roman Reigns' push is resembling Smiling Diesel more by the week. I think replacing Jerry Lawler with Booker T is like beating cancer only to find out you caught AIDS. And in a little known fact, I was the guy smoking behind the camera during Ric Flair's promo at the 92 Rumble.
I'm G. John Chase, and it's time for your Royal Rumble quiz. I want you to tell me the three names of these entrants. Number 17 from 1993, number 18 from 2004, number 16 from 1996. Here are your answers: Damien Demento, Ernest the Cat Miller, and Squat Team Member Number 2. Ain't quizzes fun?
I'm Carl Jones, and in the last week I've come to the realisation that my life in many ways reflects the current TNA Impact tapings. Much like the TNA audience, my words have to be heavily edited for this podcast to make air. My bedroom also resembles the boudoir that was the lighting effects used for the recent taping, and so few people actually see me that the wider world has to ask the question, do I really exist?
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and since last week I found out that Brian Clark isn't dead! Who knew?
This is the panel for the 27th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about the best and worst Royal Rumble pay-per-views in history next.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Y'all ready for this? Hello everyone and welcome to the 27th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
I'm eating popcorn.
Carl Jones.
People will be removed from the podcast when both feet hit the floor.
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Uh-huh.
And it is very good to be back with you today. We have a topic that I'm very, very excited about. By the time this podcast is up and ready to be listened to, we will be about 1 week away from the Royal Rumble pay-per-view and such. It is Rumble season, and we need to have some discussion about this pay-per-view now while we have the chance. I saw a thread on the Pro Wrestling Early Message Board which inspired this, so I want to give credit to, I think it was Good Helmet, who made the original post, where he suggested a best Rumble pay-per-view topic of discussion. And the reason why I kind of gravitated to that and liked it was because we were thinking of something along those lines anyway, best Royal Rumble in history. But my opinion was that the 1992 Rumble was going to be the consensus best Rumble match, so there's not too much of a discussion there. But the variance that came up when people were talking about the actual pay-per-views as a whole was what kind of inspired this. So I sent this out to all of you guys. You have responded in droves. We're recording this on Tuesday. You've only had 24 hours to reply, and we've got an immense amount of feedback to get to. So we're going to get to as much as we can to talk about the best and worst of the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. But since we've mentioned that already, we will open up with discussion of 1992. So Slicky Tricky Damon from TPWW Forum says, 1992 was the best Rumble ever. Put that cigarette out. Seth82 from TPWW Forum says, I'll say 1992 was the best. Ric Flair was phenomenal at the Rumble. Bobby Heenan's commentary during that match was so brilliant. So many legendary names were involved in the Rumble. Ric Flair, DiBiase, Michaels, Von Erich, Piper, Roberts, The Undertaker, Randy Savage, Rick Martel, Hogan, Slaughter, Vicious and more. Gary N.Y. Simon. There's a difficult one. From the UK fan forum, I'm usually in the everything was great in the early 90s camp, but it has to be 1992, doesn't it? The most star-studded Rumble match ever has aged surprisingly well, although admittedly the Bushwhackers had to stink up the joint. Tiger Rick from the UK fan forum, an opinion cannot be wrong by its very nature, but when you answer this question with anything other than 1992, you completely disprove that. The Rumble match itself is way above every other one. It's got a unique stipulation, it has brilliant commentary, it's full of ex-world champions, and it has the right amount of elimination so that the ring doesn't get too full and winds down in the middle to allow it to tell stories properly and kick into gear at the end. The Flair Hogan, Flair Piper, Hogan Taker, Jake Savage, Hogan Sid stories all beautifully intertwine in this match. Plus, it has the single greatest one-man performance perhaps in history. It's utterly perfect. The rest of the pay-per-view is hit and miss. Very good opener. Great moment when Piper wins the IC title, and then 1.5 stinkers. They can't drag it down, though. The rest is too good. And Dude Life is a final nomination here from F4W Online. It says, Bobby Heenan's 92 Rumble is the Misawa Kawada on June 3rd, 94 of commentary. Just a period of sustained perfection. We have talked about the 1992 Royal Rumble on two previous podcasts. I don't know how in-depth you guys want to go, but this had to be discussed as the first one, because when people think Royal Rumble, a lot of people think 1992 right off the top of the bat.
Yeah, with 1992, because obviously he's absolutely right with the main Rumble match. I mean, we've talked about it before. Obviously, Ric Flair had one of the best performances of Royal Rumble history. And I think obviously the fact that the Rumble was for the title kind of elevates it above everything else, and because there was also no title match essentially, because the Rumble was a title match, it also kind of added that extra bit of star power, because the star power wasn't divided between two matches, it was all in one. So yeah, I mean, with the commentary as well, the Rumble match itself, absolutely fantastic. The only thing for me in terms of like because we're talking about the pay-per-views, so yeah, we got to talk about here. We have to talk about the undercard as well. And for me, because of the Rumble match, this is in my top five. But because it's just the Rumble match that I think is good, it doesn't make it like number one for me. It doesn't put it anywhere near that, because it's the undercard lets it down quite a lot. I mean, you get a decent, you know, Piper winning the IC title off the Mountie.
Yeah, you got Orient Express versus the New Foundation in the opener, which I actually enjoy quite a lot. I think that is a good match.
It's pretty decent, yeah.
It is also quagmired with Bushwhackers Beverly's with Jameson at ringside, yeah, and LOD v the Natural Disasters, the most aptly named tag team in history.
That's where we get the real bad coming in. If you're gonna probably judge it by the minute of that pay per view, there's more good by the minute than there is bad.
But, I remember you said that last time. In terms of weighting it up through time, that's where the Rumble kind of has its strength tonight too.
Whilst I love the Rumble and it is the best Rumble match of all time, I can't personally put it as anywhere near number one in terms of best pay per view.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of in principle agree with everything you said, but I think I'd say given that because it was for the title, the actual Rumble match itself, you know, which it means the Rumble is more important on this show than any others for me, and I think because the Rumble is so good with that significance behind it, I'd rank it right up there in terms of the overall pay per views, because I think the Rumble itself is better than any other, so I'd probably have it equal first, really, as far as Rumbles go. Yeah.
Are you surprised that, considering how WWE, WWF like to recycle all their ideas, are you surprised that they've not tried to recycle this yet, of putting the title on the line for a Rumble? This is the only time they've ever done it.
I guess I am surprised in a way, because it seems like they've been kind of trying to reach for something always, you know, at the end of the 40-man Rumble a couple of years ago to try and spice things up. And yeah, I mean, 92, I mean, it's actually worth mentioning that 1992 is a good one to start, because it was actually the first Royal Rumble where there was anything on the line. Yeah, the first four that they did, there was nothing at stake. I wouldn't mind it, because the belt means so little, and it might be a nice kick in the balls to try and make it mean something if they put it on the stakes in a match that people do. There's very few things that the wrestling audience takes as credible anymore, and the Rumble and Mania are pretty much the only two, so I don't think it'd be a bad idea.
Right, okay, on this subject of the significance of the world title being on the line, let's be clear about this. The only reason the belt is on the line is because of Jack on the take turning. Let's be clear on that. But I don't need to go on too much about this. I think you've all covered it very well. It's Flair showing he's still the 60-minute man. The undercard, for the most part, is dross. The Legion of Doom Natural Disasters match gives me nightmares. Mounty Piper's not great, but you still get that cool moment of Piper winning the IC belt. The emailers have already mentioned there that Heenan and Monsoon, this was during a little golden period of their commentary.
Yeah, this might be the peak. You know,
they were fantastic here, and I think they were fantastic at Mania that year. And Gene Okerlund is great in that last segment as well. One of the emailers referenced to put the cigarette out, and Flair's promo at the end is sort of a nice sort of icing on the cake of his performance, you know, his work for the night. And also, not to be sort of overlooked, I don't think, the significance of the crowd turning a bit on Hogan.
Yeah.
It's the first time of any significance that you see a crowd sort of reject Hogan in any form, and we know how that would go forward in later years.
Yeah, we've mentioned the dickish actions of Hulk Hogan at the end of that match in previous... And we'll come to it again. I will say, one of my all-time favourite Rumble eliminations on this show from the Big Boss Man is he hangs himself on the bottom rope.
Garrots himself. I know. I will say just quickly, it's the only time I've ever liked the genius.
Why?
Slapping that turd Jameson.
Yeah, in terms of doing it, having the title on the line today, to go back to what you were saying, Chase, because we were saying before, I mean, so many of these recent ones, maybe it's just our old age, or... most likely because there's so much since like the 2000, since the turn of the millennium, you know, there's so much TV, and you know, seeing all the guys in one place at the same time isn't a novelty anymore, and Rumbles just mixed into each other. So I think, yeah, it'd probably make Rumbles in the last, you know, 14 years or so, 12, 14 years more significant, but I would worry it'd still get kind of lost in the wash, and it wouldn't have the iconic stature of the 92 just because of the time period that was as well. So
I mean, in terms of like the more recent Rumbles, I mean, we've had way too many Hell in a Cell matches now, and cage matches, and Money in the Bank as well is not really special anymore. the only one that does actually remain special in any way is the Royal Rumble, strangely enough. And that's, you know, that's done every year, the same as like Money in the Bank is and Hell in the Cell and so on. But it still retains that kind of specialness about it.
Which, even though they've cheapened it to such a degree, like it's been about 10 years now where the guy who won the Rumble usually either didn't go on last or whatever. Or
in some instances, even wrestled in the opener at Mania.
Which bothers the hell out of me. I hate that. I never liked the world title defense in the opener. It's a recent trend that I think has devalued the Rumble. Well, the thing with the 92 Rumble that makes it stand out, and it's obviously, I mean, we talked about this before, that the whole element of it being Flair on the big stage, doing what NWA fans wanted him to do, which is go the hour, beat all the WWF guys and be the world champion. It's tough to gauge because Flair didn't headline Mania, and that match was the second most highly promoted match at WrestleMania. So again, from 1992, one of the more remembered, finally not a single negative vote on 1992, to another high opinion here, 2001, Bad News Gertner from TPWW Forums says, 2001, Dudley's versus Edge and Christian for the tag belts was great, Angle and Triple H for the world title, Jericho versus Benoit ladder match was awesome, great Rumble match with Austin winning, plus Drew fucking Carey. Loopy date from TPWW, 2001 for sure, even if it did feature Billy Gunn in the final four. It featured one of the greatest heel matches of all time, maybe the best. The Walls of Ladder Co. is still one of the greatest ladder spots I've ever seen, and like Bad News Gertner said, Drew Carey's involvement was fantastic. Not a distraction like so many celebrity segments, and the bit where Lowdown are told that their spot was given to Drew was tremendous. That was great. Plus, this was the night that should have returned Kane to his debut glory with his ring-clearing dominance. Plus, didn't he go something like 50 minutes? That's unheard of for a 300-pounder. Smelly Meatball, also from TPWW, says the best is the 2001 Rumble. The undercard and the Rumble itself was really good. Supersonic from F4W Online, 2001 as an event stands above the rest. A fun opener to keep the crowd happy. Though one of the greatest ladder matches of all time, the only shite of the evening is kept relatively short, that being China. A pretty good sports entertainment title match, though one of the most fun Rumble matches ever, with all kinds of peaks, valleys and twists, plus a tremendous variety of characters. CD Player from the Wrestling Forum also votes for this. The rivalry within the TLC crew furthered as the Dudley Boys won the tag belts from Edge and Christian, Jericho and Benoit tore the house down with a classic ladder match, and Triple H was pinned by Angle in a rare heel pay-per-view match. 2001 are possibly the best booked Rumble match ever. The flow was excellent. Matt and Jeff alone were alone in the ring a few times. Drew Carey's brief involvement was entertaining. Hardcore elements introduced. Kane dominating. Honky Tonk made a surprise appearance. Austin was busted open by Triple H before he got in the ring. Austin and Rock had an epic stare down, and Austin wore a crimson mask for extra drama as he eliminated Kane to win the match. And we've got a few more here as well. This is by far the most voted one. Phoenix 20191 on F4W says one of the best for me was 2001, in which it was pretty much all about The Rock and Austin being taken out before he got to the ring, and the match did a swerve where Rock was thrown out and a bloody Austin got in almost half dead and threw Kane out. The stare down between Rock and a bloody Austin that starts in the corners, then they slowly get up and walk to the middle of the ring as everyone stops and watches, is amazing. Lagouche from the UK Fan Forum says 2001 for me by far, it has everything. Twists, great surprise entrance, multiple strong stories going in and throughout the match, the two biggest stars of all time facing off, and Kane putting in the best performance of his entire career. Liam Salisbury also says 2001 for me, but Kane should have won. I disagree personally. No, he shouldn't. Yeah. Kane should not headline WrestleMania. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. And an interesting thing here that we'll get to, Carl, because a gentleman by the name of Mookie Garner, who a lot of people in F4W will know, is a big stats guy for The Observer, provided a table ranking system in terms of grading the Rumble involving, you know, average star rating for matches, the highest rating of the show, and a time-weighted average, as you were suggesting early on, to determine that in his mathematical formula, the Royal Rumble 2001 was the best. Carl, I know this is one that you, I think, if I had to guess, I think you think this is the best Rumble pay-per-view of all time.
I'm pleasantly surprised by all the feedback you got there, because I was always of the impression that 2001 never got the recognition it really deserved. So I'm pleased by all that feedback, because I think it is a fantastic show.
Yeah, it got the most votes, so I want to start with the two most popular ones, so there you go.
I mean, I've never been the biggest fan of the Dudley Boys. I don't know if that's a unanimous opinion around this table or
not.
I'm not
too high on them, really.
But for the opener, it works really well, and it does continue that sort of the marathon feud, if you like, of intertwining the Dudleys with Edge and Christian, and obviously the Hardys at different points throughout the sort of the 12-month period from Mania 2000 through to the following year's Mania. Angle Triple H was really good, and you had the involvement of Trish and Stephanie and
Vince,
and you worried that that's going to detract somewhat, but it it worked, you know, it's just sort of just the right amount for me. You know, it doesn't take away from the match. I think that's really good. The ladder match is an interesting one there. Someone mentioned the Walls of Jericho on the ladder.
Yeah.
That's not the one spot that always sticks in my memory from that.
Is it the tope?
It's the tope. Because I you know, just watching it and just flinching at the time, and thinking, Jesus, because it's just the way Benoit hits the chair and it just completely stops the forward momentum and he just drops to the floor. You know, never in a million years did I expect it, but that was a great match. And I don't know why, looking back, but I was really surprised that Jericho won for some reason.
The ladder match.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it's just because I'd got used to Jericho sort of losing the bigger matches at that point. You know, you think of the fully loaded match with Triple H. Obviously, he'd lost to Benoit at the SummerSlam that year as well.
He lost to Kane at Survivor Series, maybe?
He lost to Kane at Survivor Series. So I was quite surprised by Jericho's win. The Rumble itself...
Okay, this is where I'm a little bit interested, because I remember, first of all, a few of the takeaways from this show. Do you remember the guy that was dressed as Stevie Richards in the front row spazzing out during one period of the match?
I do vaguely remember that.
just go back and watch. I think it's when Rock and Kane are in the ring in the corner or something like that, and there's a guy dressed as Stevie Richards just freaking out. It's hilarious. But the Rumble match, I'm curious to see what everyone's opinion is, because to me this doesn't hold up as well as it did at the time.
No, I wonder if that was where you were going with it. As a standalone match, I don't think it's the greatest. I mean, you have that the wonderful spot which one of the emailers referenced there with the Austin Rock getting up from the corner.
Yeah, that's great.
That's wrestling drama at its finest.
Yeah, they wasn't the first time they'd done it in that Hell in a Cell Armageddon as well.
Hell in a Cell. It was sort of a nice tease of things to come as things move forward. Completely agree with the notion of Billy Gunn in the Final Four. That's a bit of a sickener. And this love for Kane, I just cannot get my head around.
The idea that Kane should have won is a step too far for me.
Oh, absolutely. I love the feedback, and whilst I sometimes ridicule them, that doesn't mean I don't appreciate the feedback. But in this instance with Kane, we have just crossed a line. No, we have crossed the line. We have far surpassed the line. The line is about 50 miles back. And it's just... It's Kane, people.
Dreamer angst. It's Kane.
He's returning. Someone mentioned about returning to former glory. What former glory?
The debut. He said. And he said his debut glory.
His debut glory.
Yes. Actually, I will say, just as a actual more analytical, as opposed to just ripping on Kane approach to this Rumble.
Okay.
I like the Drew Carey starts good. Kane freaking out. The hardcore stuff was very, very novel. But there's a period in the match where I think it's Albert, Kane, and Bradshaw are in the ring, and it just goes on for fucking ever. It goes on for about as long as it sounds like it would.
Yeah, and you get the little hardcore stint, which I didn't find particularly entertaining either.
It was fun at the time. It was quite novel at the time.
It was sort of novel at the time.
It was the first time, so, you know.
I suppose, but you mentioned about it sort of holding up. You go back and watch that now, and you think, really? It's sort of too much of a prolonged comedy stint in the match for me, and I'm just not a fan of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this notion of Kane winning the Rumble is just despicable.
Yeah, I don't know if Mania 17 would have done a million buys if Kane was headlining. I think that it's interesting to throw this out to you guys now, because I'm curious to see, again, overall pay-per-view. Do you rank this at the very top?
No, I mean, from top to bottom, it's a stack card apart from, like, Ivory and China.
Which should be discussed, because China's bump into the injury is one of the more laughable events I've ever seen.
No more laughable than the rest of her career.
Moonwalking into Ivory and then collapsing in a heap.
Oh, is this when she...
Had the fake neck injury.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lawler runs over because he's so concerned, and the drum. And Billy Gunn makes an appearance as well, so you know the shit's just got real.
When the one shows up.
Poor old Billy Gunn. What did he ever do?
He had it all.
That's the question.
Yeah, that's true. Stacked undercards. Fine Rumble. By this point, Rumble's just... They really do mix into one another, and I don't know what I'm looking for of a Rumble these days, to be honest.
Yeah, to me, it's a little bit later on when they start to bleed in together. There's a few more that I remember a lot more vividly, and this is actually something that came up as a commonality in the feedback, is there's a lot of people that made the same point that you made, G, at the top of the show, about how you remember the early ones so vividly, and then it comes to a point in the last probably about 12 years, maybe 10, where it just starts to really veer off, and it becomes a lot more hazy. Is this part of that hazy period for you, or do you still remember this one as vividly because of the strength of the show?
For me, the kind of hazy period starts kind of maybe roughly including 2008 Rumble. I think it's after then and things start to get kind of hazy for me. The 2001 Rumble, to answer the question, would I have it up there? No. It would probably be in my top five. For me, I kind of almost had like almost slightly opposite view of Carl, surprise, surprise, of that. I remember...
I know why you're not going to love this one so much.
Because I watched this one live as it happened, and I walked away from it enjoying it at the time and thinking, like, this is a good Rumble, okay? A good show overall. I thought it was really good. And then at kind of like school and it would be actually sixth form, so at the time, like people were kind of like talking about it and they're saying, oh, it's the most amazing show that they've done so far. And I was just like, well, hold on. That's a bit strong. It was a very good show, but I don't think it was, you know, the dog's bollocks. In terms of the undercard, Dudley's Edge and Christian, sorry, I thought was a good match. Angle Triple H, which, I wasn't certain about that match. Like, I remember it being pretty good, but like, I just remember thinking, like, I've kind of seen this. I've seen this match already in 2000. They did this kind of angle with
those. Far less heat this time.
Yeah, and also because of the result as well, with Kurt Angle winning, I was then confused because at the time I didn't completely buy into Kurt Angle as champion.
Well, it's because they treat him like a dickhead on
yeah.
TV.
Okay, so when he retained, I was like, so what? He's, because in my mind it instantly meant he was going to WrestleMania. So I was like, so he's going to WrestleMania as champion. I was like, well, who the fuck is he facing then? Because they didn't come across as anyone obvious, like straight away saying like, oh, that guy's got to face Kurt Angle. So I was confused at that at first. The ladder match, I just remember thinking it was a good ladder match, but it wasn't my favourite. Just remember walking away thinking, I've seen better ladder matches.
I think that match is really, really good.
It is good. I'm not stating that this is like crap or anything. I said it's good, but I just remember there being more better ones.
At the time, I thought exactly the same way at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably on first view, underrated it because... I don't know, my eulogised memories of WrestleMania 10, obviously, and matches since then, I'm always, you know, it's not the actual what's happened, it's that feeling of expectation, and maybe it was another really good match at the time. So on first viewing, yeah, I know what you mean. Anyways.
Yeah, sort of things, this can sound so like petty and so like stupid, but I didn't like the Walls of Jericho spot on the ladder.
Really?
And to try and explain this, I'll probably contradict half the things I've said in the past, but however way you put it, I don't see it as one guy doing a submission hold on the other. I just see it as two guys balancing each other on top of a ladder. That's all I see it. And so for that brief moment, like as innovative as it is, I just see it as like, that doesn't look like a genuine maneuver you would attempt on top of a ladder. It looks like just something that they thought looked like a good idea, but it doesn't come across as well to me.
You ever had a... been in a ladder match yourself?
No, I have not.
Maybe it's the most natural thing in the world.
It probably is. It probably is.
It's probably not, but I will say I kind of see your point, because I think there's always a few moments like that where, like, like the first time I saw the Canadian Destroyer, where it's like, that's a step too far.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on the Canadian Destroyer.
There's no need to get into that, but...
It looks good, but there's just like an element of it where it's just like you're really pushing it now. Like, it doesn't seem right.
At the same time, it tore the house down. The crowd went fucking crazy for it. So in terms of grading like that, I don't hold anything against it.
It was a great match, and I'm probably another reason why I probably didn't come fully buy into that match as much as everyone else is because again probably about Kurt Angle Triple H, it's like I've seen these two wrestle each other.
Yeah, they wrestled had a series the year before.
They wrestled each other all of 2000, and so it was just like I've already kind of seen this, so like they've already had like their blow off match at SummerSlam, so it's kind of like this was just going over old ground. China Ivory,
that's awful. There's no defense for that.
No, there's no defense. It's awful. With China, I don't know whether I should even bother trying to kind of rationalise thought over China.
No, please try!
No, stop there. Stop there. The word rationalisation means that whatever you were going to say has immediately been disqualified.
Because, as I probably already described before, when I got back into wrestling, there was like a few acts that caught my eye, which made me go like, okay, I'm going to watch this new version of wrestling. Because that's how it came across to me. It came across as new.
Don't you dare say one of them was right. China.
And one of them was China. Right. Right.
I just want to ask,
dude, can we move off from your sexual preferences as a 16-year-old, because you're killing that credibility.
I want to ask, Walls of Jericho on the ladder, a step too far.
Yeah.
China, two-time Intercontinental Champion, yeah. Not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dodgy at best. But I loved this Royal Rumble for Kane. Now, those are the two things everybody talked about, okay? They talked about the ladder match, and they talked about Kane, okay? And they're just saying, like, how he eliminated everyone. Now, Kane was another guy that I was intrigued by when I first got back into wrestling, right? Because it was just, like, he looked so different to what I was used to. And so, yeah, I agree with that one commenter who said it was a return to where they said it was a return to form for Kane. Where, yeah. Like, because it sort of reminded me in the persona. So, like, you know, like how Kane comes across as such a badass when he first came in, and like now we're seeing it again in Royal Rumble form, and he holds the record up until last year for most eliminations, and so I absolutely loved it. In terms of the finish, I remember at the time I was annoyed. Okay,
because
not because Austin won, to try and desperately reheat Kane, and we had like this glimmer of like they could do something with Kane again. I thought maybe he should have won the Rumble, not to main event WrestleMania 17. The only reason why is because I guess in my mind at the time, I still had fresh the 2000 scenario of where Rock and Big Show wrestled each other again at No Way Out for the stipulation to go on to WrestleMania. So in my head, I had it like, well, if Kane wins. Like, they could always do the thing at No Way Out where Kane faces Austin and Austin wins like that.
Have Kane win just to devalue the Rumble? That makes no sense.
It's going
to
happen. Well, that scenario, not discrediting because it had happened the year before, so it wouldn't be beyond conceivability that they would do it.
It's been done before.
But at the same token, it would be the same effect in the end anyway, surely.
It would. I mean, yeah, it's say, like, it devalues the Rumble and so on, and it's, you know, absolutely kind of would, you know, but... You'll get your main event in the end with Austin Rock and how they were setting that up, and in the long run, like when you remember things and so on, you just remember Kane won. Like, Kane won a Rumble, he got the record for the most eliminations. Okay, he didn't go on to WrestleMania in the end because he lost a challenge, but that's not the worst thing to happen to Kane in his career. I thought there was a brief opportunity to do something a little bit different. I know it's obviously wrong, but just as at the time when I was watching it, I just thought, well, why couldn't Kane just won it and then just last a title shot down the line? They've done it before plenty of times.
And now over to Carl.
When it comes to this sort of almost voyeur-like obsession with China and Kane because they look different...
Transvestites and gimp masks, that's what he's about, man.
I'd dread to ask what your safety word would have been. That's another...
Kangaroo.
The flaws in China are that it's China. That's all you need to say there. There are lots of things that are finer, and there are lots of places I'd rather be in. As for the Kane thing, there is just no justification for Kane winning that Rumble. You're seriously suggesting A, that the notion would then be you do Kane and Austin at the February pay-per-view. Why on earth would you do that when you have to have the Triple H Austin blow off before Mania? I don't understand this love for Kane. I just don't get it.
It's just marking out for the gimmick, and I think if you've never marked out for the gimmick, like,
you know, I understand the notion of building up the big giant monster heel so that Austin has the bloodied Austin accomplishes something at the end.
Yeah,
I think that people. I think it was done so well that people want more than it was designed to be without realising that if it was more than it was designed to be, it would have been fucking terrible.
And if you look at the precedent for it, no one looks back on the sort of the journey to that Mania particularly fondly.
No, absolutely not.
So, you know, the trial balloon, if you like, had already proved not a failure business-wise, because we know how hot the company was, but in terms of the build, it's not looked back on fondly. And I can see absolutely why they wouldn't want to revisit that a year later.
So we move from two of the top contenders for the best Rumble PV of all time to one that got a vote for best that I personally disagree with quite strongly. John Cena's Van from the F4W board says, I have fond memories of watching the 2006 Royal Rumble with my friends and being the only one that expected Ray to win. So that one. The rest of the show wasn't great, though. That is an understatement of all time for me, because this may be my least favourite Rumble, maybe my pick for worst. Absolutely ostensible pay-per-view as far as I'm concerned. The decision... First of all, I hated the fact that the Rumble... And this is where the Rumble really started to get devalued, actually, is this year. It was bad at the time, the show. There was really nothing on it that was really any good at all. Mm. And it only got devalued in time as Mysterio doesn't go on last, which was the first time that had happened in years. And it was just absolutely just up and down dreck again. You talk, you know, one of your big things with 2001 was you feel like wrong decisions. Edge winning the title, getting a 3-week run where the ratings up to a 4.5 every week, only for Cena to beat him.
Son of a cock.
Completely unnecessary. Maybe the worst main event in Royal Rumble history, with perhaps the worst ending in Royal Rumble history. There is very little on the show to like. Boogeyman JBL, Ashley Mazzaro, Mickey James. There's a fun Cruiserweight opener in there that's perfectly acceptable.
That's the Gregory Helms one. Isn't
the Gregory, yeah. When Gregory Helms wins, fun little match, doesn't make up for the next 2 hours and 40 minutes of piss poor pay per view stuff.
I'm absolutely dumbfounded that someone has picked that for their favourite Rumble. I mean, you know, the WWF or WWE have done a lot of tasteless things in their time. The way in which they sort of wed Eddie Guerrero into storylines continuously throughout his death for a good 18 months was just deplorable. It wasn't a particularly good Rumble from memory, and I've never been a big fan of this of the Rumbles where it's not the last match.
Yeah,
I understand the significance of the belt. I appreciate that, but the Rumble should always go on last for my money. And I'm even less of a fan of it when, to my mind, the only reason it is done is so Mark Calloway can come out on his fucking chariot and collapse the ring. There is no justification for subjecting your audience to a main event of Kurt Angle versus Mark Henry just so fake lightning bolts can hit a ring at the end of the show.
And it pissed me off more because they actually did the same ring break effect that Lesnar and Big Show did. And as soon as it's like, oh, you just suddenly the good one now with this crappy angle that no one's going to remember.
It was just, for me, from top to bottom, a distinctly poor show.
Exactly. That's 2 votes against that, against John Cena's Van's opinion. So,
a tricky one because for some weird reason, I have kind of like a strange nostalgia for 2006. Don't know why.
It's a bad year.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why. It's probably because of the emergence of Edge, I guess. I don't know. But in terms of Rey Mysterio winning the Rumble, that's the lowest of the issues that I have. That's at number 3, okay? Number 2 being the main event of Mark Henry Kurt Angle just being like a complete mismatch. Kurt Angle, phenomenal wrestler, right? But even he can't carry that amount of shit. Okay, and particularly in a main event, and I actually completely forgot about the whole Undertaker thing at the end. So you just reminded me of that, and it's just absolutely atrocious. What I want to get to is the real issue with this freaking pay per view, right? Number one, which is John Cena winning the title. Okay, I was fucking fuming when I was watching this, right? Because believe it or not, I was a John Cena fan at first. You know, I was one of the ones cheering when he got drafted to Raw in 2005. I thought, this is absolutely great. But very quickly, it kind of emerged that was actually one of the worst moves that they made, with Batista as well, in early 2005. By the time we reached the end of 2005, I was just done with both of them. So I was one of those guys that was booing him whilst I was at home, marking out when Edge won. And so I just thought, this is absolutely fantastic. I get this. Okay, they've decided to go with something a little bit different. Blatantly, they're going to go with a triple threat at WrestleMania. Edge will hold the title till then, and it'll be Edge, Cena, and Triple H. And I'll be fine, because then you're not just relying on Triple H to carry Cena in the main event. You know, you got Edge there as well. And then you see this absolute bullshit. Like, Edge raises ratings, and then only to lose the title 3 weeks later. I was fucking fuming. You just got this new hot act, and you've just pulled the rug from underneath him completely.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah. One of the big takeaways was, and this is when Carmi and you were listening to Sunday Night Submission on a frequent basis here, the whole idea of the plan, in capital letters, yeah, was Cena versus Triple H at WrestleMania, with Triple H winning the belt from Cena. That was always the idea, dating back months. And the big thing was, well, we got to stick to the plan. We got to stick to the plan. Edge even says on his DVD, we never stick to the plan. Why are we doing it this time? Wink, wink. And of course, they did change the plan. Cena retains against Triple H. So if they're going to change the plan, why didn't they change the plan when Edge was red hot?
Yeah, I don't think I can add a better explanation than that. The only thing I would say is, or would ask, is, were any of you shocked that Cena won? Because whilst I was annoyed, because I thought it neutered Edge just at the time he's getting hot, I still wasn't shocked that he lost.
No, I wasn't shocked that he lost, and I actually wasn't the biggest Edge fan at the time, so I wasn't really that begrieved by it at the time.
No, if I remember rightly from speaking to you, there was always this sense, and I agreed with you, that the heat was more about Lita than it was about Edge.
Yeah,
I wasn't surprised that John Cena won, but it didn't stop me from still profusely swearing 48 hours later.
No, yeah, so I think it was kind of...
This is also the one where he comes out in the spaceship, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he comes from the ceiling on that weird... Remember that entrance he did at the Rumble? He comes down from the... Carl, you remember this, surely.
Oh, God, I've forgotten about this,
yeah. It's like the Black Scorpion entrance or something. Oh. He comes down on this weird spaceship from the ceiling that spits out steam.
I think, though, to be fair to the contributor... the only reason he said he liked this himself was because he picked Ray was going to win.
Because he thought Ray was going to win. He's not making it. He's not making a big argument for the rest of the show.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with that and say, cool. Because it fucking sucks apart from that.
So. Yeah, that's high on my list for worst. Scaling back in time a little bit, actually quite a lot, to 1990, MIM731 from the UK Fan Forum says, I'm probably clouded by nostalgia, but for me, 1990 is easily the best. A super roster, a dynamic rubber match featuring the first major showdown between Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. It has a surprisingly cracking undercard for its time, including a really good match between Rugged Ronnie Garvin and Greg the Hammer Valentine. Underappreciated. Spartan from the UK Fan Forum also says, totally agree with 1990. Might have something to do with being one of the first events I actually saw, but I reckon top to toe it was just a tremendous pay-per-view. Even loved the opener despite the Bushwhackers being in it. Just shows how good the Rougeaus were to carry those two buffoons to an entertaining contest. Still watch it on DVD from time to time. 1990, what do you think?
This undercard looks like it fucking sucks. It's like Bushwhackers, Rougeaus, Beefcake Genius, Ronnie Garvin Valentine submission match probably was the best thing on the undercard.
Yeah.
Duggan Bossman, which I see here, Dave Meltzer gave -2.25 stars.
Yeah, Meltzer was never a big Duggan fan at this period of time.
Yeah, rightfully so, well done.
The Rumble match itself, I find to be really fun. I really like this Royal Rumble match itself. This is one of those ones where, and it's quite amazing because 1990 is a particularly rank, boring year for the WWF outside of a couple of spots. But this Rumble, if you go back and watch it, there are so many... Again, it's that 1992 thing of, man, it's just star after star after star after star. It's Savage, it's Jake, it's DiBiase, it's Dusty. You get all those great moments. And the one thing that I'll say, maybe not necessarily as a criticism, but as a thing that maybe holds it back, they do such a great job. They put so many stars in for the first half, and the second half is all about Hogan and the Warrior, and their great stare down, their great first encounter, that when... Warrior is eliminated by that arsehole Hulk Hogan from behind, although he complained about this years later, but yeah, it's okay when he does it. Yeah, after that, there's really not much left. They actually do that quite late in the game, and I think it's like Barbarians in the final five, and it's like the slim pickings.
Now, you've got to be fair to Hogan here. All he was doing was a clothesline, and the momentum naturally took the Warrior out of the
ring. Oh, here we go. The Hogan apologist is in the house.
I like the comparison with 92. It does mesh up very, very similarly in terms of the number of stars. I mean, the notion that you've got Jake in there early. Savage is actually the fourth man eliminated.
Yeah, I know.
Just to put that into some sort of context there, to show you how sort of star-laden that Rumble was. But it does suggest a bit of a lack of poor planning, because you mentioned when Warrior's eliminated, you've got Rude and... No. It's Warrior and Hogan have the double clothesline, and then the next man in is the Barbarian, who comes in and just starts dropping elbows. You know? God, this really is after the Lord Mayor's show. I remember the crowd being particularly hot. Surprised by the commentary team of Shivani and Ventura.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
The only other time that they'd done the commentary was SummerSlam 89. But so that always struck me as odd, being a youngster at the time. But the undercard, which Kieran has gone through there, the Bushwhackers are terrible in any context. And as much as I love the Fabulous Rougeau's entrance music, I've always thought that Jacques Rougeau was criminally overrated.
Really?
Criminally overrated. You know, everyone knows that we were praying for that blow off to the Garvin Valentine feud. especially following on from SummerSlam 89
awesome
again.
The stand-up routine Ronnie Garvin does.
Yeah.
He doesn't know if he's coming or going.
It was a feud for the ages, folks. But no, the undercard wasn't anything to write home about. And just an interesting side note for anyone. On the VHS cover, because I've still got this on VHS, the front cover is a picture of the Boss Man pointing to a little star, which is Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Yeah. That was the match they chose to put on the front of the VHS cover.
I remember that vividly. Fun little side note here before we get on to it. Mr. Perfect was originally supposed to win this Royal Rumble, and Hulk Hogan said no.
Of course he fucking did.
I've always, we talked about this before, and I remember talking about it before with you, Lamus. I was sort of amused by Hogan winning this.
When there's no reason.
It's like, there's nothing on the line for it. He's the champ. They're going Warrior Hogan at Mania. So let's let Hogan win the Rumble. What the fuck's that about? It's like, if that was done today, we'd all be pissing over it, saying, oh, I've seen us one again, a meaningless match, holding everyone else down. Just befuddled me.
Well, I think it's sort of par for the course in 1990, if you look back. You know, Warrior should win the Rumble to build to Hogan, and we're all in agreement there. Warrior should get the Earthquake feud if you're really committed to him as champion at SummerSlam. And then by the time you get to Survivor Series that year, in the ultimate Survivor Series match, they're both there raising arms, but who gets the 1-2-3 and whose music's playing at the end of that show?
There you go.
You know, just as a side note for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's not Jim Hellwig.
More on that dynamic later on as we get into another Royal Rumble that affects.
And just on a little side note, again, does anyone remember Jesse Ventura's get-up for this show? Anyone remember what he's wearing?
Is it like leopard skin with like a weird like safari hat or something?
No, that's WrestleMania 5, I believe. Royal Rumble 90. He is dressed. He has a Mickey Mouse jumper on.
Has he got the ears?
And he's got the ears as well.
I love Jesse Ventura.
This is why he's my favourite commentator. I love Jesse Ventura. In terms of the show, the undercard, everyone just was absolutely right about that. It's absolutely atrocious. I just remember being bored by that whole first half of the show. In terms of the Rumble, I remember looking at the back of the VHS and seeing all the names on it and thinking, shit, this is going to be really good. First off, why is the champion in a Rumble? Right, because in my mind, because I didn't know the history of the Rumble
yet. Yeah, they hadn't done that yet.
So I didn't realise that they hadn't given the stipulation of the winner gets the champion. So I was just like confused, going like, was he going to challenge himself?
It still doesn't matter. Yeah. Why would the champion even give a shit?
It's
doesn't make any
pride.
Sense.
There's just so many things of that show. Money. Yeah, because
winner's share of the purse.
So yeah, I suppose Gorilla would actually explain that, wouldn't he? And probably.
Yeah. Because you know, at the time, I still thought, you know, the winner gets the title shot. So I don't get why Hogan won it. And then when I found out like that wasn't a stipulation, I was still confused as to why the champion was even in the match. I was like, why didn't you just have a championship match and, you know, the Royal Rumble, you know, like you do for the remainder of the time doing the Rumble.
I guess they learned from their mistakes.
Yeah. I'm sort of surprised I didn't know that Perfect was really going to win, because I think it was Perfect Hogan in the end,
Perfect
wasn't
Hogan
it?
Hogan in the end. The idea was to give Perfect some steam because he was feuding with Hogan prior to this.
Yeah, he needed to, because that was all the Saturday night main events, wasn't it? Yep. Yeah. Considering that there was nothing on the line, Perfect so should have been the one to win that Rumble. In hindsight, if they needed to build him up.
Well, that wasn't even the worst of it for Perfect. You know, he gets the Rumble win pulled from underneath him. What's his reward at the Sky Dome? He's jobbing to Brutai.
Yeah, that's a different podcast for a different day, but still out at an outrageous point. We'll skip forward 3 years here to 1993, because Smelly Meatball from TVWW says the worst is the 1993 Royal Rumble. Remember as a kid liking it, except for Yokozuna winning, but looking back, it was a really bad pay-per-view outside of the Bret Razor WWF title match. I've watched this Rumble very, very recently, and I may say this might be the worst Rumble match in history.
Yeah, just looking through Dave Meltzer's star ratings here. He gave this a dud.
The whole show or the Rumble match?
No, just the Rumble match, a D-U-D.
He was there live for that show,
was he really? Yeah, I think he was. He obviously liked it a bit more than most people, maybe because he was there live. He'd give the Steiner's Beverly Brothers 3, Sean Marty 4, which I think you're saying was a disappointing match.
Well, I didn't think it was disappointing, but Vince McMahon sure did. And there's a lot of and Marty got fired right afterwards because Vince was upset. Thought, you know, asked Sean what the deal was. Sean promptly suggested that Marty Jannetty was shit faced, so Marty Jannetty got fired. From this show, speaking of undercard, those two matches. I don't think this Rumble as a whole ranks as the worst Rumble of all time. The crowd is not very good for this show at all. They're really flat. They're with the Steiners match, and they are with the Sean Marty match, but they die around the time of Bossman Bam Bam in the middle. They pick up a little bit for Brett and Razor, but again, the Rumble match itself, there is such an absolute lack of depth. And not only is there a lack of depth, nobody does anything in this Royal Rumble. Nobody does a fucking thing. I don't need to run down the hit list of some of the names, but Damien Demento, Terry Taylor, terrific Terry Taylor. There's a few others, Carl, that I know you want to get in.
Don't forget that that young up-and-comer Carlos Colon.
This youngster, it's 46 years old at the time in the Royal Rumble. Thank you very much, Gorilla Monsoon. Tenryu, who walked out, and I swear I could have heard one person cheer in Japan because the crowd was that quiet, they didn't react to anything. It was just, the match itself was so putrid. There was such a notable pay-per-view, I guess, in the sense of Lex Luger makes his first WWF appearance with Bobby Heenan.
Oh, the narcissist stuff. Yeah.
The narcissist stuff. The debut in the Rumble with Giant Gonzalez as Taker's WrestleMania 9 foe. So yeah, just a really sluggish, slow-ass match. Doesn't go anywhere. Backlund, who again is not very over at the time, goes the entire match.
Oh, breaks Flair's record as well for longest entrant. Like, fuck off.
Well, Flair's on his way out the door at the time. He would leave the next night. Like, one of the common complaints about Royal Rumbles is when it's obvious who's going to win. In this case, even when you usually get that, there's still a good few guys, at least up to this point anyway, in Royal Rumble history, where there's a lot of guys that are over. Here, there's about four. You got Taker, Perfect, Flair, and Savage. Yoko as well, I guess. But that's it. No one cares about anybody else.
We talked about sort of star names in previous Rumbles, and it feels to me like with 93 there is a significant drop off.
92 to 93 may be the biggest divergence of a peak to a nadir.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that would have been. I'm sure there must be a story to it that we can look into some other time.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
Yeah.
Real pain in the ass kind of a situation for WWE.
Yeah, they obviously went down the wrong track somewhere. But no... Bigelow Bossman bored me to tears. Marty and Sean is a bit of a strange one in the sense that I've never thought it was a bad match, but maybe I just expected too much from it. And maybe it's because I think they went on to have better matches throughout the course of 93 when Marty was eventually rehired. The Steiners match was nothing more than a showcase for the Steiners and the crowd. It was fun and the crowd were with it. But yeah, the Rumble itself, Flair's eliminated fairly early on, Perfect goes not long afterwards, and you are left with some dross. I mean, you know, no one looks back fondly and thinks, God, do you remember the earthquake Yokozuna stare down?
Warrior Hogan it was not.
Yeah, Warrior Hogan it was not. Austin Rock it most certainly was not. And I think what sort of sums up the show is the most nonsensical final elimination I can ever remember.
Oh, that Savage going for the pin.
Savage hitting the top rope elbow and then going to pin Yokozuna and getting, you know, kicked out of the Royal Rumble. You know, kudos to Savage for leaping over the top rope in the way he did. But this is Randy Savage. Are we really going with the notion that he's some dumb fucking rookie who's going for a pin in the Rumble? Then again, having said that, this is the man that jumped over the top rope to attack Jake Roberts.
Last
so.
Year he jumped down himself.
Yeah. Yeah, so maybe I should have seen that one coming. the only bright spark for me from this Rumble is that I enjoyed Brett Razor. And there is still some fun little interplay between Monsoon and Heenan because they're still playing off the Flair meal ticket sort of thing.
Yeah, at one point, I think Heenan tells Monsoon to leave. Monsoon says he's out of here, and then Heenan says, no, wait a minute, I've got to ask you a few more questions.
Yeah, the Rumble's awful. The rest of the show I don't remember being too bad. The Steiners Beverly's I thought was decent. I think isn't that where Steiners win with a Frankenstein?
Yeah, Scott does the Frankenstein DET.
Yeah, it looks like he kills him, yeah. Marty Jannetty, Shawn Michaels was pretty decent, quite solid. Same as Carl, I enjoyed the Razor Ramon Bret Hart. There were two guys I liked a lot, particularly that one point with Razor Ramon coming in and he was like along with Macho Man, one of my top guys. So I enjoyed all that. The Rumble itself, the wrong guy went over again, I'm afraid. It should have been Macho Man.
No. I have to interject here. I like Randy Savage, don't get me wrong, but there is no way on earth that Randy Savage should be headlining WrestleMania 9 at that point.
I don't disagree at all, but I'm just curious to see what everybody else is thinking at the same time.
It's not that I have some great need to defend the man who Randy Orton got his inspiration from when it comes to the rest hold. I love Savage as well, but I can't defend the idea that he should have won that Rumble.
Yeah, and do what? Go against Brett?
Yeah.
Face-to-face?
Well, then Hogan come and just shit on both of them.
He's eaten to Savage most of his career.
Yeah, Hogan probably love that, actually. Yeah.
The shit continues.
I think in hindsight, Carl, if I take away my obvious favour towards Macho Man,
the fact that you've got a hard on for him,
I think I would whether Hogan got involved or not, whether your guy got involved or not at the end,
your guy,
okay. I think I'd much whether he was past his prime by that point or whatever, I would much rather have seen a Bret Hart Savage match than Bret Hart Yokozuna.
A bit of a conflict for Brett, though. Again, granted, they didn't do much justice to Brett anyway at WrestleMania.
I don't know, in order to do that program, whether they would have to turn Savage heel again in order to do it, because surely they weren't going to turn Brett, so they'd have to turn Savage, and Savage is a great heel. I think I'd much rather have seen that match. I'd given them the opportunity. Whatever we talk about, 93 was just a really bad scenario in general. Whichever way we look at it, whether it's Yoko or Hogan, it's just bad. And I don't think Randy Savage is the worst alternative in that situation, personally.
No, he's not necessarily the worst alternative. But at some point, and this is a problem for promoters and wrestling in general, at some point you have to move forward.
You have to cut the cord.
Yeah, you have to cut the cord at some point. And I just, going back to Savage in 92 hadn't worked. So I don't see how you can go back to him in 93.
I think that's the context behind that there, more than anything else, is the fact that Savage didn't draw well with Jake, even as great as that feud was, artistically speaking. He didn't draw his champion very well when he got it at WrestleMania 8. So it clearly was a, let's move Savage. Again, he didn't even wrestle on WrestleMania 9. He's doing the commentary. From one that's not very polarizing in terms of a very poor Royal Rumble, to one that apparently is, 1999 as an overall pay-per-view, has got mixed reviews here. Hungry Freak 90 from the F4W message board. I'm pretty surprised that no one has said 1999 yet. That's my personal favourite. The best pay-per-view show in the era, in my opinion. It was just fun. I think we all saw how far things could be pushed before things started to get a little bit over the top, which I think started to happen later that year. That show was like a peak, a personified point of no return. I do feel sorry for all the chair shots Foley had to take. Big Vic from TPWW says the best is 99, Vince and Rock screw Austin, and of course the I Quit match. On the other side of the coin, Phoenix 20191 from the FOW message board. Royal Rumble 99 was a train wreck. People literally in the ring with no one there at least twice, while Austin and Vince are backstage. People being taken out and replaced by the guy who assaulted them during the entrance, and then dragged out themselves by non-Rumble participants. Just a horrible Rumble.
Rock Mankind was fun, obviously.
That's great at the time.
Yeah, I hope it's ace. I have no sympathy with Foley. I'm sure it was all his idea. Rocky's innocent. As innocent as Shawn Michaels.
Absolutely.
I didn't like this at all.
It's the rest of the card as well.
Vince, I think at the time I hated the stuff with Vince in the Rumble. He just shouldn't be there.
This was again one of those things where a lesson of let's not fuck the simple Royal Rumble build up too much. Let's just have the guy win and go to WrestleMania. They again tried to get too cute here, and I can't say it didn't work because WrestleMania 15 drew fantastically well. But artistically speaking, this show, the Rumble itself, thumbs down for me.
The obvious pro that we've just gone over, the only thing that defends this show is the title match.
What, Sable versus Luna?
Yes, absolutely. Because, it's one of my favourite Rock matches in there, however brutal it really is, because the Rock's charisma is just like oozing everywhere, and you do feel some sympathy for Mick Foley.
Because
it's just brutal. The rest of the card, though, which, if you mind me, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn were in individual matches against Big Boss Man Road Dogg,
and this is the match that I distinctly remember. Billy Gunn shit in the bed in the most boring match with Ken Shamrock, maybe of all time, and completely made me realise, you know what, this Billy Gunn's not ready to be a single star. I don't think he ever will be. Yeah.
Cause I'm pretty sure I was at this because you know all about the new wave and stuff and elevating new guys. I was kind of into giving Billy Gunn a chance.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, he was fucking atrocious if I remember correctly.
those two matches, as you said, Road Dogg and Boss Man was for the hardcore title, if I remember right, was awful. And then the Shamrock Billy Gunn. The only thing I liked about that whole thing with Billy Gunn, from a personal amusement standpoint, was the fact that Billy Gunn was in the Rumble and hopped to the ring, because I just thought that was funny. in terms of the Rumble itself, you know, when we're talking about like really rubbish Rumbles, 99 is absolutely there, because besides Austin, who else is there
the
in terms
tees.
Of big names? Oh. There isn't, because you got Vince. I mean, Undertaker's in it as such, as in he appears in it.
He appears and kidnaps Mabel.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think you have Kane in it, but he eliminates himself because he's chasing after people with straitjackets. Is that the one?
Of course he does.
Right? And Vince McMahon wins it. That's just fucking wrong.
99 is a terrible year for the WWE booking wise.
With the exception of the Rock Mankind match, which is the one faint bright spark on this massive shit.
Deluge,
thank you. Quite the wordsmith there, Kieran.
Deluge of diarrhea.
Oh, and it's all over that arena that night. The problem is, this show has Vince Russo's fingerprints all over it.
Yeah.
You know, Vince Russo effectively molested this show. Road Dogg and Boss Man is terrible. You know, Shamrock Billy Gunn, see Road Dogg, Boss Man. You've got the X Pac Gangrel match, which it doesn't quite click, does it?
Yeah, it looks like Tiger Mask and Dynamite compared to the previous two matches.
But the only noteworthy thing from the Gangrel X Pac match is, you know, Teddy Long fucking up a three count. If anyone remembers that, baby, he pulls his up a three count. I've already mentioned Foley and Rock. Then you get to the Rumble. Now, I think an emailer, someone who was in favour of it, mentioned there that it showed just how far you could sort of push the boundaries without being ridiculous. I know those weren't his exact words, but I'm paraphrasing there. So let's go over this Rumble. We have already noted that on two occasions there was no one in the ring. One of those times, Austin is being assaulted in the women's bathroom by members of the corporation.
Shane Dusty wasn't there to find it so funny, you know.
And is taken away in an ambulance, in theory. You've then got Kane, who, as we've said, has eliminated himself. This is after he's cleared the ring, and the orderlies come out to chase him with a straitjacket. For some bizarre reason, Kane feels the need to do the slit across the throat pose before he eliminates himself and walks through the crowd. Why, no one to this day knows. You've then got Mabel being abducted by the ministry and thrown into a hearse, which is filmed as Undertaker, for some reason, then sort of caresses the hearse window. Austin comes back in an ambulance. Vince is on commentary. Al Snow comes out in still his blood-drenched white job squad shirt. And eventually Vince McMahon is declared the winner after The Rock
declared the best wrestler in the business.
After Rock interferes, and the show closes with Vince and the Stooges doing the beer toast on all four corners of the ring. So I'm sorry, when the emailer suggests that this pushed the boundaries without going too far, I have to disagree.
solid summary.
And just to add a note, because Cole did the favour earlier with Schiavone, just to note another thing that hindered this show was that, if I remember right, there was
no Jim Ross, that's
no
right,
JR
Michael Cole.
Commentary. No JR being on the show. I know it's shit anyway, but like that hindered it even more. Because now we don't even have someone who's good telling us it's shit. We're just going to have to smell it ourselves.
And it had quite the waft. But just on a side note for the Michael Cole bit, if for anyone who's seen Beyond the Mat, Jim Ross is feeding Michael Cole.
Oh, he's really busting open now. So from one that I'm guessing does not get the Dave Meltzer five stars, to one that actually did get a lot of good reviews. 1991, Pat IIRC from the UK fan forum. 91 always gets lost in the mix, which is a shame. The Rockers versus the Orient Express is epic, and the ongoing feud with Macho and Sherry and the Ultimate Warrior throughout the show was aces. You also have Sergeant Slaughter bumping around like a loon, Virgil split from the Million Dollar Man, Greg Valentine and Rick Martel put on decent shifts in the Rumble. Nice show, always overlooked because of 90 and 92. PP Cusprim from the F4W board says 91 is massively underrated. Rockers Orient Express is great. Bossman Barbarian massively overperformed. Slaughter and Warrior is bad, but a very famous match and finish. The Virgil turn is one of the craziest pops up to that point, and a really great Rumble match. Air Raid from the UK fan forum also jumps on this one. It is one of my favourite pay-per-views of all time. The 992 edition is the best Rumble match of all time, but the pay-per-view is let down by a terrible undercard. The Rockers Orient match is the best opening match I've ever seen due to its pace, state-of-the-art technique, and sheer adrenaline. This segment with Warrior and Sherry is effective and relevant to later events. Bossman Barbarian is a really exhilarating match with a few moments that put it a notch above what you might expect from the pair of them. The WWF title match is highly dramatic and sets up a supervillain for an inevitable confrontation with the Hulkster. The Rhodes vs. DiBiase Virgil match sets up superbly one of the most enjoyable and emotionally charged face turns I can ever recall. Finally, the Rumble itself is packed with talented wrestlers and colourful characters, has some great moments and stories running through it, and above all else sets up the perfect feel-good ending and precisely the result that everyone wanted, all before an utterly rabid crowd. I often put the tape on just to watch the Rockers Orients for some fun wrestling to make me smile and end up watching the whole show. I don't think there was another Rumble pay-per-view ever that I would just stick on and watch in its entirety without skipping anything. That makes it the winner for me. A hell of a case made there for this show, and this is one of my favourite pay-per-views of all time from a Royal Rumble standpoint as well. Keen to see what everybody else thinks. Molten crowd.
Yeah, I remember Rocker's tag match being good.
That's an understatement. It's great.
I remember being really good. The Rumble itself, you know, like Hogan going over, which I guess, you know, in terms of the whole storyline, was the right one to go over. I don't remember too many details about that Rumble. I do remember, like, when watching all of them in a row, 89 through to 93, 92 being my favourite, and that 91 being pretty close. So, like, I did enjoy the show.
The undercard, yeah, to me, the Rumble match itself is serviceable, perfectly fine. The strength is the undercard, maybe more than any other Rumble, because Rocker's Orient is great. I've never seen the Mountie Coco Beware match on the show because it got clipped from the video release, if I'm not mistaken. It followed Warrior Slaughter because they were worried that the crowd was going to go nuts after Slaughter won the belt, which instead they just chanted bullshit.
I remember now.
But that match itself, I want to get onto to Warrior Slaughter as a real surprise, because I'm no Slaughter fan, but that match is a lot of fun, and mostly because it features the greatest run-in in the history of professional wrestling from Randy Savage, who ambushes Warrior as he's running down the aisle chasing Sherry with a clothesline, runs like a madman to grab a light stand, bolts across, drills the Warrior with it, and then sprints into the night!
Yes.
Sprints into the night in one of the best, honestly the best run-ins I've ever seen in my life. He is running so fast. I've never seen a wrestler run that fast before. Really entertaining show from start to finish. I have a different recollection to other people, but I never really remember Bossman Barbarian being this big surprise, you know, match or anything like that. Not that it isn't, but to me it just struck me as average.
I really honestly can't remember anything about that match.
Other than Bossman sweating like a bastard, I remember that.
No. Rockers Orient Express was awesome. It was probably my top three Rumble matches, pay-per-view matches, you know what I mean. Again, yeah, Virgil thing is what it was. It mattered at the time.
You know what? It holds up remarkably. The emotion, the way he sells it, like Virgil, he's just like slowly looking at the crowd, stone-faced, while the crowd's just pissing their pants. Monsoon selling it huge. Piper selling it huge on commentary. Again, Monsoon, Piper commentary team, which actually I didn't mind on this show at all.
I don't think I saw this. I'm pretty sure, I know for a fact I didn't watch it at the time. I saw it retrospectively. So going in, it was like with this wacky idea that obviously Slaughter beats the Warrior. But yeah, the same thing. I think it was fun.
Slaughter winning the belt is clearly a reaction to the fact that Warrior didn't draw, and they're going to shift back to Hulk Hogan, who wins the Rumble match itself. And I just want to point this out from some recent study and some recent look at the numbers. Warrior considered a failure because he didn't draw, even though he had bad opponents and Hogan had the monster heel, the hot monster heel. 1991, Hulk Hogan gets the very underwhelming challenger in Sergeant Slaughter after WrestleMania. Warrior gets the hot heel in The Undertaker, and guess who draws better? It's not Hulk Hogan.
I think 91 does fall into that category of a show that doesn't get as much recognition as it deserves. You've already talked about the tag match with the Orient Express and the Rockers, which is a fantastic opener. When it comes to the Boss Man and Barbarian, nothing stands out again as being great, but I think it's just sort of I think with a lot of people it's the case that the bar is set very low, so as a result it far surpassed all those expectations. I remember it being better than it had any right to be. The crowd throughout the show are red hot, and to me there is no better example during the show than the Virgil turn.
Yeah,
I know it seems strange to say because they are hot for the title match and they are hot for the Rumble.
Yeah, when Warrior snaps the flag over his knee.
When Warrior snaps the flag,
rips it up.
But when Virgil hits him with the belt, and it's such a long build that's gone from pretty much from 89 onwards, really. Yeah. All leading up
even
to that
before
point,
that, like,
even before that, possibly. And the way the camera pans out, because you mentioned about Virgil's look, because Virgil pulls that stone face look, and the camera pulls back, and the crowd are just going absolutely berserk.
There's so much heat on it, because if you remember, a fan throws a drink at DiBiase while the thing's going on, and the security runs over to try and stop catch the guy who threw it. The crowd are so into the idea of Virgil, pick it up. It's such a great moment when he finally does, and he doesn't oversell it. He just drills the guy, stands there and looks at him, and looks at the crowd going crazy. And it honestly,
and then just walks away.
And it's like, that guy is a fucking star, and I love Virgil. So much for that, That was pretty much the peak. I mean, there were a few highs, and the fans did stay with him
through the summer, through to SummerSlam. They stuck with him. Yeah. The world title match, obviously, the crowd hot because we're still in the midst of the Gulf War, I should say, and the WWF are still trying to tap into that, as unseemly as that all is. But the crowd go berserk for Warrior breaking the flag. Sarge has clearly got his working boots on that night. He's bumping like a trooper, especially when you've got to consider that even at that stage he's around 41 and he's not the smallest man in the world, and he is bumping around like a mad drunk for Warrior.
Yeah,
and the crowd just eat it all up. The Savage running that you've already referenced there, it's the fact that he's pumping his arms a bit like a bit like Lloyd does in Dumb and Dumber when they're in the car and he's pretending to run. Those arms are really going. It is absolutely brilliant. And the Rumble match was what it needed to be. It was the showcase for Hogan to build to Mania 7. There is star power in there with the Legion of Doom, as you mentioned, and The Undertaker, who's still a fresh act at that point. You even get that little run in from old Sabu Simba, Tony Atlas.
Oh, yeah, which is Tony Atlas.
And you even get the sort of the nice tie-in of the blow-off of the Hogan-Earthquake feud as well, with Hogan eliminating Earthquake at the end, and you get the Americana with the flag. So the Rumble boss, not the best, serves its purpose. And there is enough good stuff on the undercard, all supplemented by a fantastically hot crowd.
Moving forward a few years from 1991, we have a couple of nominations here. Zach Malibu from the F4W board says, no love for 2005 yet? I think that might be the most underrated one. Highlights include Paul Lennon's shooting star bump off the apron via Snitsky clothesline, the Raw vs. SmackDown standoff, and then both sides uniting to toss out Muhammad Hassan, Hassan Benjamin teasing a reunion, Flair furthering the Evolution split by trying to toss Batista out, Jericho mimicking the Rene Dupree French tickler dance, Shawn Michaels glaring at them mimicking Simon Dean, Daniel Pewter's hazing, the controversial finish, and the McMahon quad tears. So there's a good few reasons to like it. Shayna Mac version 2 from the UK Fan Forum also says, I know it won't be a popular opinion, but I love 2005 because Edge vs. Shawn was the perfect opener. Undertaker in the carry job of his career in the casket match with Heidenreich. The moment backstage with Christian saying, Tomko, give me a beat, and Tomko saying no. The triple threat for the WWE title, JBL was coming into his own as an effective heel champ, and Angle and Jeff had great chemistry in triple threat matches. Triple H vs. Orton for the WWE title, and the Rumble match itself was ridiculously packed with talent, which allows for an occasional shithead like Luther Reigns and comedy spots with Coach. Then we have the Batista vs. Cena shenanigans, and Vinnie Mac blowing out his quads. A complete clusterfuck, but I loved it. There's been other Rumbles where a lot of it was outstanding, but a shit match or two pulls it down. 2005 was consistently at a high standard. What do you think about this one, 2005? One of the later candidates for best.
I don't really see it as what they're the best at. One thing I might be really wrong in saying this, but of the last 10 years, probably in retrospect significant because of the Cena Batista stuff and what then there, because then was it the draft, when did the draft was
draft after WrestleMania.
Oh yeah, because it was Cena JBL, wasn't it? But yeah, I mean, Michael's Edge was good, but you got Heidenreich Taker on there.
Yeah. Also the Snitsky Heidenreich backstage, I like you too, John.
Oh, the heavy breathing.
The
segment.
Heavy breathing, the homoerotic overtones in that promo.
JBL Angle Big Show, I can't remember anything, but I can't envisage it being good. So
not
yeah.
good. Triple H Orton was the Randy Orton doing the glassy eyes concussion cell that I'm sure he practiced many a night. But again, this is the end of Randy Orton's push.
Yeah, it's sort of
kick
the
one pedigree.
It's sort of the last rites to Randy Orton for the foreseeable future. It's sort of the bookend of the burial, if you like. I don't look back on this show particularly fondly. A lot of the things there that the emailers referenced that they liked were either sort of one or two rare comedy skits, you know, Simon Dean, the French tickler dancer sort of thing, or things that went horrendously wrong, like Vince's quad tear. So, and whilst I can appreciate the humour in that, and I had a good chuckle myself, at the end of the day, that doesn't constitute a good show to me. And as far as the, you know, someone mentioned about Taker carrying Heidenreich, we didn't carry him very far, in my opinion.
Thoughts on this?
Brutalize, victimize, sodomize, Heidenreich.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah.
That's a sign once.
Yeah, and yeah. That's not hype. That's
I remember that actually. Yeah.
Also, that's not hype. That's Heidenscheid. That was another good one.
Anytime Vince suffers immense pain, love it.
That's why he sits down leaning against the ropes.
Like he's in complete control.
Yeah. He's just sitting down in the corner, just like, this is going to come across so well. You know, it's just like, no one's going to notice at all. It's going to be so smooth and seamless.
Does he think he's Raven or?
Yeah.
Fun Rumble match, but.
Yeah, but nothing to write home about. And the fact that the one thing that sticks in everyone's mind is Vince tearing his quads, I think just, you know, it speaks to the actual quality of the show in terms of the in-ring product.
The only other thing I actually remember of Rumble's more the build, and that's those trailers that they're showing where it's like West Side Story
that's
with
right.
the two with the Raw and SmackDown teams.
Yeah, I did love that. The Rumble is the strong point of this show for me. I do love the Raw and SmackDown sides butting heads and then, you know, teaming together to throw Hassan out, yeah, because he's such a diabolical heel that regardless of what side you're on, you all hate Hassan. Really nice little touch there, and a huge pop for Sam being eliminated. Some good stuff in the Rumble match itself as well, setting up the Angle Michaels WrestleMania match, if I recall correctly, with Angle getting eliminated and then losing his shit and beating up Shawn. And yeah, Paul Lennon's great elimination. Definitely the highlight. Another candidate here, Gary Thompson, says the Royal Rumble 1998. HBK versus Taker was so good, it made up for the other undercard matches, and I enjoyed the Rumble itself. There was a story with Steve Austin having the bullseye on his back, and it was a major push for him to the big prize of his first WWF title. Z Cassano from Wrestling Forum says, I still mark for the entire Royal Rumble 98 pay-per-view. Vader Goldust was a good opener. Rock Shamrock was one of the better feuds from late 97 to early 98, and Rock being such a cocky bastard. I didn't care for the midgets even then. I was gutted that LOD didn't win the belts from the Outlaws, but Taker HBK in the casket match was top draw. The Rumble itself was a little bit predictable, but being a kid, I didn't care as long as Austin won. 1998, what do you think about this one?
I can't talk about this one.
Why? Oh, because the tragic back injury to Shawn Michaels in the casket match itself.
Oh, grow a set, you prick.
Wow.
Like that, is it, Carl?
Cone stalled is the best. The Rumble match was fun. Obviously, being a Foley mark, I loved the three faces of Foley all appearing, and the nice beatdown of the former Salvatore Sincere Tom Brandy. No, the Rumble was good. Yes, it was predictable, but that wasn't a bad thing. Michael's Taker was very good, and featured one of the last few times that I ever considered Kane relevant. I agree with the emailer on Vader Goldust. I thought that was whilst you know, not a 5-star classic or anything like that, it was a fun little opener.
Yeah, very good finish too with the moment Luna on the back.
Yeah, with Luna on the back, that's a nice spot to end on. I don't look back on the rest of it particularly fondly. Rock comes across as great throughout the course of the show with the singles match. I don't remember the single match being great.
No, the one
but my memory's a little bit hazy on that. But Rock Rock comes across as a star throughout, and it's sort of his continued rise, which is all good. So, yeah, I look back on the 98 shows being one of the better ones.
I will say this is for the Rumble. This is I guess down there with 93 as amongst the skeleton crews in terms of lack of depth, because you got three members of DOA, Mick Foley coming out three times, both headbangers, both Godwins, Tom Brandy.
Don't forget Kurgan.
Kurgan, I was going to get to Kurgan. He's treated like he's a big deal in this match. And Ahmed Johnson waddling down to the ring,
oh, God,
with his tights up his ass, more pads on than everybody else in the ring is wearing at the same time. And after Mark Henry handles the big Johnson, in Jim Ross's words, he is swiftly eliminated, and that's the end of Ahmed.
And also, for some reason, an inexplicable attack by Jeff on Owen Hart by Jeff Jarrett, which never went anywhere.
Never went anywhere, but did feature the great man of Owen Hart chasing after him and falling downstairs.
But it's quite the contrast. You have this image of Owen falling down the stairs as Ahmed Johnson comes through the curtain with his arse in the breeze.
It's a little laughs and points it out too that makes it even better. Perfectly again. This is a weird time for the WWF, because 97, at the end of 97, it was, you know, Brett had gone, it was feeling like depth was not good at all. It was pretty much, we got Steve Austin, we got Shawn Michaels, help! I mean, they had a few other guys, I'm being facetious when I say that, but still, depth was really, really lacking. But the crowd was hot here, and you could feel some tangible momentum with it. You know, again, predictable that Austin's winning, but that's what people wanted, and they wanted it really badly.
And the presence of Tyson that ties into
it
all.
Yeah, that's true, it felt like a big deal.
I like this show. I liked the Rock Ken Shamrock, which I think was just there to facilitate the feud as it goes further on into Mania.
Yeah.
I said Vader Goldust underrated. You just reminded me of the spot with Luna on his back, which was just like, that must have been fucking scary for her. Also, just let's not forget the Midgets six-man tag as well, in which Lawler is particularly at his best on commentary.
Where Sonny fails to leapfrog a midget, is that
right? Yes! Sonny is a damn fine-looking referee at that point, but her duties weren't great. Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, I remember being a pretty good match. Not their best match they ever did, but being still pretty solid considering the unfortunate incident that happened to Shawn Michaels.
Tragic.
I know, unfortunate. And only now recently you remind me of, like, when you actually say the names of how bad the Royal Rumble is, that's pretty fucking shocking. But in terms of my memory of my rose-tinted glasses on, that's not what I remember.
Yes, the Godwins!
Yeah, all I remember is Foley coming out three times as being a novelty, which I actually liked because it was the only time they did it, and it was the only time they actually could be able to do it in 98, because it was just following on from a year in which he was jumping between the characters anyway, so it made sense that he comes out three times. And then just obviously my second guy, The Rock, coming out and at number four and lasting all the way to the final two.
Yeah, big push for Rock.
Yeah, just a real showcase for him. And you know, with him and Austin again, you know, the two guys who were feuding over the IC belt in 97. And I actually liked what they did with The Rock by the fact that he finished second to him, because like in terms of Rock and Austin, in terms of their parallel careers, he was always one step behind Austin anyway, so it just kind of made sense that he just fell behind Austin on this one.
Plus they had
it was foreshadowing.
It was foreshadowing, but at the same time it was playing off in the previous month anyway, where Austin and Rock were feuding over the Intercontinental title, and it was that definitive stamp of Austin's the man right now.
And also, you'll probably instantly correct me on this, but the one thing I probably really liked about this Rumble, and I can't recall them doing it ever again, is the Intercontinental Champion being showcased so well in a Rumble. You think about all the other times in the other Rumbles where the IC Champion is on the show, whether he's defending the belt or whether he's actually in the Rumble or whatever, they're never really as well showcased as obviously the World Champion.
Yeah.
But in this one, the IC Champion actually finishes second to the big draw guy.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, that was a really nice way in early 98, where you're rebuilding your company, to really showcase your secondary belt. I thought that was a really nice way of doing it.
No, I'd agree with that wholeheartedly. Moving on to one that's probably going to get less enthusiasm, although we might be surprised, the 1995 Royal Rumble. Carl, I know that you have strong feelings about this show. Loopy Date from TPWW Forum says, 1995 is definitely the worst of all time. Other than the HBK skin the cap finish, it has the worst Rumble lineup in history. The Blue Brothers, Quang, Well Done, Mantar, Aldo Montoya, the second version of the Head Shrinkers, Face Doink, and the Heavenly Bodies. The tag team title match was the final finals of a tournament, WWF decided that the two most marketable teams for the Rumble undercard were Bam Bam Bigelow and Tatanka, and the eventual champions Bob Holly and the 1-2-3 Kid. This has the added crap bonus of being the kickoff, no pun intended, but it's still delightful, of the Bam Bam Lawrence Taylor feud that would main event fucking WrestleMania. Undertaker for IRS because something about dead people not paying taxes, and this was apparently a surprise to the Internal Revenue Service. Taker was attacked by King Kong Bundy once again, this built to fucking WrestleMania. Diesel Brett was decent for a Diesel match, and I actually enjoyed the Razor Jarrett contest, but those combined 45 minutes couldn't make up for the rest of it. This was the Shawn Michaels kind of marathon, but kind of not, considering the fact that the intervals were only a minute. Thoughts on the 1995 Royal Rumble, because that's quite a strong criticism. However, Mookie Garner in his statistics I mentioned earlier on, the table he made about the star ratings and weighing it up over time, had this as the second best Royal Rumble ever behind 2001. Because I guess he rated Diesel Brett so high, Razor Jarrett so high, you liked the tag match. Kieran, you got the star ratings hand?
I've got them here. It's, what did you say, averaged over minutes? And
over minutes, yeah.
Well, if you look at it, Meltzer gave Jarrett Razor 3.25. Taker IRS only a quarter, so, and that, but that was the only real bomb on there. Diesel Brett 4.25, 3.25 for the tag titles, and then 3.5 for the Rumble itself. So it was given top to bottom, it's pretty solid.
Pretty solid rating. I want to gauge opinions around the table, because obviously there's a point there about the Rumble not having a whole lot of depth. The one thing that I think irks me about this Rumble is it just feels so mid-card. And that's unfortunate, because Kieran, you and I, both huge Shawn Michaels fans, but the whole idea of Shawn and Davey being the two to go the full way through, and obviously with depth not being really all that high, it didn't feel like it meant as much as it probably could have had it been a different year with a bit more depth and really trying to make Shawn the guy. Because the point, ultimately, it was two guys who had never really been top guys going the whole way against a really, again, a shitty roster.
This one, they had the shorter duration.
Yeah, 1 minute duration. Yeah.
That hurt it as well, I think. It just felt like it was just rushed, like a significant shit, no star power.
Yeah.
95 WWF.
Crush in the final three.
It does just come across like that, because up until that point, both of them at best had been Intercontinental Champion. I mean, fair enough, Shawn Michaels winning. I mean, it didn't really mean anything towards WrestleMania 11. I mean, he wrestled Diesel for the world title, but he didn't win or anything like that. So it was just
didn't even
like,
go on last.
Didn't even go on last, didn't win the title off Diesel. It was just all quite meaningless. And like,
to me, this is the worst Royal Rumble as a show, not just Royal Rumble match, but as a show of all time.
Really? Okay, I'm interested to hear what you say.
I detest this show with a passion. It's the foreshadowing of what is a hideous year for the company. You've got the IRS Undertaker feud, which comes about from nowhere and basically amounts to vignettes of IRS at gravestones talking about dead people and taxes, which then leads to a piss poor match which leads the Undertaker down of basically a dead end, hideous feud with the Million Dollar Corporation, which lasts throughout 95 and leaves the character as probably the least interesting it's ever been before Mick Foley shows up in 96. Razor Jarrett was okay. I don't remember it being standout. Bob Holly and the 1-2-3 Kid as tag champs. I mean, they go and lose them a week later to the Smoking Guns anyway. So it shows the significance of that. And obviously, that is basically the setup for the LT Bam Bam main event at possibly the worst WrestleMania of all time. There's a pattern here with this show, folks.
I didn't hate that match, though. I enjoyed that match a lot.
Yeah, Tatanka was in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anything with Chris Chavis is likely to be the shit. Brett Diesel, thought it was all right. I didn't think it was anywhere near as good as the Survivor Series match later in the year. Obviously, again, you're keeping the belt on Diesel to have the worst drawing year in company history at the time. And then you've got the Royal Rumble. I was never a fan of the fact they shortened it to 1 minute
per entrant.
And they made less of a deal about the fact that, in theory, at that point, it was the chance to main event WrestleMania and go for the world title, and made it more about the fact you had the opportunity to have Pamela Anderson escort you down ringside.
That's right.
That was the main selling point of this Rumble, including a vignette in which various WWF superstars, and I use that term loosely, in 1995, leave voicemails for Pamela Anderson about how great it's going to be at WrestleMania.
I remember that, including Luger, I think, leaves one for this.
Boink is in there as well. Boink the Clown leaves a voice message for Pamela Anderson. That's how shit this Royal Rumble is. And a few honourable mentions of names that the emailer didn't mention there include Mabel, Sir Mo, King Kong Bundy, Rick Martel, who no one had seen in 18 months. Am I forgetting anyone else?
The Bushwhackers.
The Bushwhackers are in there. You mentioned Crush in the final three.
Dick Murdoch
out of nowhere.
Including one of my favourite Kyle Ross lines ever, who said, "I can't believe Vince McMahon had the balls to say Dick Murdoch's going to WrestleMania."
Does anyone remember how this show opened?
Is this the scene where Tom Anderson's getting out the limo and all the wrestlers are marking out for her?
I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking the guitar solo by Man Mountain Rock.
Didn't Pamela end up going with Diesel anyway?
Yeah,
they wheeled in, I think it might be Jenny McCarthy.
Jenny McCarthy.
Here you go, you old hag. Hold on to him. He'll walk into the ring.
I really don't get the angst by you boys about the wrestlers like hounding her though. Because dude, this is the wrestling industry, and we know that's the way it goes down. So
yeah, standalone show for match quality. I don't think this is the worst. I really don't.
Worse for 95 or worse for Rumble? We talking here?
I think there's worse Rumbles because even though the depth sucks balls, they do get a lot of those crappy guys in and out. And Sean is clearly what the match is all about. And Sean puts on a great performance, individually speaking.
It's just not enough for me. There is just too much shit to wade through.
Okay, well, I'm not going to disagree with that too much there. Moving along now, another candidate here. A lot of votes for the best rumble of all time go to 2002. James Steele from TPWW Forum says, "It was an awesome rumble. Maven eliminates The Undertaker and Mr. Perfect returns. Vince vs. Flair was great and Rock Jericho was very enjoyable." John Carr 92 from the UK Fan Forum says, "2002 for me, something for everyone. McMahon Flair, the Undisputed Title match, topped off with one of the best rumbles of the lot." PSF from the UK Fan Forum says, "The obvious aside of 92 possibly being the best, the 2002 Rumble match is up there. The returns of Goldust, Godfather, Val Venus, and of course Mr. Perfect are fantastic. Perfect hitting the Perfect Plex on Angle got a pop most of today's current roster could only dream of. Undertaker vs. Hardy's early in the match was tremendous, followed by Maven eliminating Taker and getting absolutely decimated as a result. Triple H vs. Stone Cold standoff that actually got a reaction, I'm looking at you, Cena Orton. Couldn't give a toss about the rest of the card, but the Rumble match itself is fantastic. Again, can be watched back infinitely, and each and every time that I do, I will pop as soon as Perfect's music hits." This is a bit of a weird time in the company because after the fall of the Mighty Alliance, there was about a 2-3 month period where the WWF was kind of trying to find itself before they went to their next hot shot, bringing in the NWO, and the only real anchor was the Triple H return and Mega Push. Very strange time in the company, so I'm keen to see how people kind of gauge this Rumble, because I didn't enjoy it that much.
I liked Rock Jericho. I don't think it personally was as good as the early one that they had.
No Mercy was way better.
Yeah, I thought that was better. I thought Flair and McMahon wasn't too bad, considering the two people involved.
I thought that was a really fun match.
Mainly because Flair still looked like Ric Flair and not a scrotum. So it's just like,
Wernstrom from Futurama.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty solid. Triple H was the right person to go over because, like, I mean, just when you watch the Raw when he like came back and stuff, like the pop he got was just insane, and the same at the Rumble as well. I know it was absolutely right. I mean, obviously his eventual run later that year was atrocious, and for the next 2-3 years after that, but that initial outing of him coming back as like a baby face, man, he was so fucking over. The crowd was so happy to see him again, which is just weird saying those words now. But yeah, as the chap who's mentioned this one in, the obvious highlight of this show is Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, who's just absolutely fantastic, and for like one night only. I'm not saying he was wrestling like he was in 1990 or anything like that, but for one moment it came across like we're probably deeming like 93 Perfect. I don't know, because it just seemed like he really was going out there to make a purpose of like, I'm going to show these young guys how it's done.
He's trying to get a job.
Yeah, he's trying to get a job. I'm going to show these guys how it's done, and it's Mr. Perfect. Yeah. It's fantastic. I mean, let's not forget, this was the one where, for me, this was the first Rumble where they started doing the whole this person's returning.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a winner.
Returns, they advertise it ahead of time.
Exactly.
Back.
Not a winner necessarily, but like, oh, these acts are returning. You know, so because it wasn't just him. It was like Goldust, Godfather,
Val Venus,
all back with their original gimmicks after the Right to Censor and so on. And it was from this Royal Rumble onwards that they started setting this precedent of having the surprise guy coming in, whether they announce it or not, just saying, oh, this old nostalgia trip, we're going to have it in here. I don't know where I place this. It might just fall out of my top five, but yeah, I enjoyed it when I watched it.
Flair Vince was fun. I agree with that. Fun is probably the best word for it. Jericho Rock was good. Triple H, I mean, he did his return at MSG and it was thunderous.
It was awesome.
But I just...
And they explained here when you were. It was what people wanted to see.
But
didn't last long.
But I think, I'm sure at the time it was kind of obvious how it was going to go. When a guy's returning from 9 months or whatever it is, and just the long term is him in that face position now, it was sour taste, I thought. And was it...
Van Damme and Booker T really get the short end of the stick in this Rumble match where they come in. Yes! There you go! There's that anger I love seeing in your eyes, Carl. Van Damme and Booker T, who I think come in at 29 and 30, if I'm not mistaken, and then get promptly eliminated.
I'll come back to that and talk about it in sort of a wider context. I think it's very apt you mentioned it about it being a strange period in time for the company. And maybe that's why I don't look back on it so fondly, or maybe why it doesn't stick in my mind so much, because there is a sense of this treading water outside of the Triple H return. I'm not going to argue with the guy who went over and won the Rumble. It's not necessarily what I would have wanted to see, and as we sort of referenced there, it wasn't long before, to steal a Jim Cornette line, I think a few people were thinking, I'd rather watch a dog lick his balls than have a Triple H promo. This is a continual sort of burial of RVD, who was so hot for a period in 2001.
Yep.
And I understand the apprehension whether or not you pull the trigger on him. I think we've talked about this in a different podcast, and I may have been apprehensive myself at the time if I was put in that position. But to have Van Damme come in, get pedigreed, and just lie there on the floor until Booker T comes out as number 30 and then just scoops him out
like shit.
You know, bearing in mind that follows on from the Taker burial the month before, is really just...
And then they program with Goldust afterwards.
Yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow. I enjoyed seeing the return of Perfect and Goldust. I didn't particularly care so much for the return of Val Venus or Godfather, if I'm honest.
No.
Jericho Rock was good, but there was some stuff on the undercard that I wasn't particularly a fan of. Regal and Edge didn't mesh well for me.
Disappointing match.
Yeah, not a knock on either of them as individuals, but they just didn't click, and it showed.
I think it's almost as if it comes off to me like they both thought they were going to have great chemistry and have great matches, and they were trying really hard, but there was just something that wasn't working. And every time they tried, it was just like, it's not getting over to the crowd.
Yeah, and sometimes you get that. You've got the Dudley boys against Spike and Taz, which was poor. And I'll leave that there. Vince Flair was fun. In particular, the worst tan job I've ever seen for Vince McMahon. He looks like he's rolled around in a tub of like chocolate ice cream or something. I don't know if it was that, you know, that woman in Florida getting a revenge and just sort of locking him in a booth or something, but it's just... It sort of sums up the farcical nature of Vince that we've come to know and love in his more senile years. but I don't think I'd put it in the upper echelon of favourite Rumbles.
Okay, moving on to a couple of years to a guy winning a Rumble who's not on 2002, and that's Chris Benoit. 2004, Stevie G 1980 from UK Fan Forum. 2004 is my favourite for reasons I shouldn't, but still do. Crap Game 13 from the FW board says 2004 as a dark horse candidate. Vito Cruz from TPWW says, as for the Rumble match itself, if I can put aside the fact that it means nothing all these years later and will never be talked about by WWE again, I absolutely love 2004. It didn't really feel like they were stalling for time at any point. Everything that happened made sense, and a nice mix of cool moments and some comedy with the Cat's entrance and brutality with Orton and Foley. Plus, the overall psychology was good, especially at the end with Big Show ending up looking like a million bucks, fighting off five babyfaces, eliminating four of them for Benoit to overcome it at the end. This is actually one of the better Rumble matches, I think, that they've ever done.
just Benoit coming at number one, lasting all the way to the end, and just the spot where like it looks like Big Show's going to throw him over.
Yeah,
and
he, great, one of the better finishes.
Yeah, holds onto his neck, and as he's slowly teetering over, the crowd are rising because they think he's going to do it, and he's just slowly teetering him over, and finally wins the Rumble, which is a great moment, a great pop, and. But to be honest, that's the only thing I remember about that entire Rumble.
Oh, this is the comeback of Bob Holly for his 4 minutes of fame. I didn't even think maybe it went five. It didn't go. Certainly didn't go 15. Lesnar beats Bob Holly for the WWE Championship. So I want to see what everyone thinks about this at the time, because to me, Benoit winning was really out of nowhere.
He was ace at the time.
He was great.
Before he was, the murderer and whatever.
Before that blip in the road.
Yeah. Wow, funny. A guy who can wrestle's going to get a push.
And then no less than WrestleMania 20, which was being hyped tremendously for a full year. And it's like, they're going with Benoit. They're actually going to go with Chris Benoit. I remember reading in The Observer, like an obscure thing in like November the year before, where Dave Meltzer just said, expect Chris Benoit to get a big push at the beginning of next year. Like a very standalone cryptic message that was clear. They decided to go with Benoit. It wasn't a last minute decision, but it's certainly felt like it to me.
They teased it to some extent. If you remember, him and Cena were the last two survivors on Team Angle at Survivor Series in 2003.
And he tapped out Lesnar.
And you'd also had the two matches in one night, I think, where he'd taken on A-Train and beat him and then lost to Lesnar in a close match, which they really gave Benoit a lot more of the match than you would necessarily think they would.
Is that a Brock beat with the Brock Lock?
Yeah. Which wasn't around long enough for me.
No.
I thought it was a good move. But I think they teased it somewhat. As soon as he was announced as number one, and they'd done the bit with Heyman jabbing him in the chest where he grabs his finger. At that point, I'd pretty much assume that Benoit was going over. Maybe I was alone in that, but from that point, I thought, Benoit's winning the Rumble.
I just never believed they'd give him the push.
I think that's...
You're always hesitant to think that, they'll maybe give him the Rumble win, but whether or not it gets to where you want it to go is another story, perhaps. The card as a whole is interesting, though. I mean, old Brock and Bob Core is what it is. it's a placeholder for Lesnar because he's got to defend it against someone. This was the one with, if I remember rightly, the really poor Batista Flair Dudley's match.
Yes, open the show.
Chavo and Eddie that doesn't get
that's
that
very
long.
Disappointing.
It's very very quick for what had been a solid 6 or 7 week build.
Yeah.
Into that, they'd given it a decent build, and for it to sort of be thrown away so quickly. Not that I'm the biggest Chavo Guerrero fan in the world. You just thought that match would have more time
to it,
given what they'd put in prior, and. Triple H, Sean.
Last man standing.
I'm probably going to get a lot of hatred for this. Maybe I was so tired of this feud by that point.
Yeah,
I was really tired of it. Yeah, and I didn't particularly enjoy the match. The fact that it went on further into the spring with Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell came after that. Didn't
Hell in a Cell came after that. I just.
Meanwhile, Benoit's got Kane.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Benoit's got Kane. And it's just
fucking Kane.
Might have seemed better if he'd won the 2001 Royal Rumble, but certainly did.
I'm telling you now.
Quite possibly, but it's just, I just found that feud tiresome at that point. I'd had enough of it.
Yeah, I actually, I'm the biggest Shawn Michaels fan in the world. I just wanted to get the fuck away from Triple H as well, because it's just like, we've seen, it wasn't a bad match by any means, but again. Cop out finish.
Yeah, absolutely agree with Carl. I think probably one of the reasons why I probably forgot about it is because I was just trying to get over that feud. It was just like, SummerSlam 2002 and all was great, and few matches that I had later on was all fine, but still going at the beginning of 2004 is taking the piss now. It's just get over it. The only thing I just want to mention is with the whole like Benoit thing was him going for the Raw title. Because when he won, I was kind of like, oh, we're going to get Benoit Brock. I said, this might be pretty good, because I didn't know Brock was leaving.
And they've been building it up.
Yeah, because I had no idea Brock was leaving.
Well, neither did they at the time. So.
So I thought, like, oh, this is going to be a pretty good match. And then when he actually just comes out and decides he's going to challenge for the world title, I was just, like, just stunned by it. I didn't expect him to be moved to the A show.
They did sort of set up where the explanation was Benoit felt he would never get a fair chance with Heyman there, which is why he went
for the
Raw belt, if I remember rightly. Just as a quick follow-up on the Triple H Michaels thing, I didn't think it was a bad match by any means. It's just that I was just you know, the match itself is fine, but it was just, it had grown stale to me by that point. It certainly wasn't the worst of their matches. I think the one that they had at Armageddon following the Elimination Chamber wins that award.
Three stages.
Yeah.
Moving on here, we do have another candidate from the 2000s. 2007, to be exact. Omega 919 from F4W. 2007 was hella good, with Hardys versus Eminem, a really great Rumble, and the awesome Cena-Umaga match, which is probably my favourite non-Rumble match ever in the history of that pay-per-view. Hardcore Hogan from the F4W message board also agreed. Fantastic name. And again, keen to see what people think of this one, because I think saying that it was a really great Rumble match is overstating this quite dramatically. I didn't enjoy this Rumble match at all, with the exception of the final few minutes with Taker and Shawn, which was really good stuff. A Rumble match where they get into this habit sometimes where they have too many guys in the ring at once, and there's no flow, things aren't going in and out the way they should be doing, you know, freely, and didn't enjoy the Rumble match itself.
Is this when they loaded it up and like the ring was just filling up at times?
Yeah, it was absolutely filling up. I think at one point there was like 15 guys in the ring. It was just absolute overkill. I remember watching it with you and thinking the same thing, like, they're actually throwing these guys out.
Yeah. It just becomes a fucking Battle Royale, and Battle Royale suck.
Yes, they do. No one can do anything.
2007, this one for me is up there. I think it might just sneak into top five for me.
It's a one-match show.
We'll go past the bad, right, of Bobby Lashley and Test. Yes,
that's awful.
Right, that's bad, right? Batista Kennedy, not the worst, not the best.
Crowd turns on Batista.
Yeah, it's there. Hardy's Eminem, which I loved because that little kind of brief period of time that went over the unfortunately bad December to Dismember and the Armageddon, was it?
Yeah, the ladder match.
Yeah, basically the extension of the Jeff Hardy Nitro feud, which I really enjoyed. So I really liked that match. Funny enough, I really liked the John Cena Umaga match as well. I thought there was it was an ace match. Really well worked. Liked the finish as well. The Rumble, absolutely right. The Rumble, the reason why this goes up for me, because it's the final moments of the Rumble.
We're taking Shawn.
Where they're the last two left. I was so marking out for that moment, because I was like, these two, because Shawn was predominantly Raw, Undertaker was predominantly SmackDown, neither one had been on either brand, particularly at the same time, and I was like, these guys haven't touched each other, or even been in the same room, looked at each other, since Royal Rumble 98, okay, yeah. Which I loved. And so when those two were the final two, I was like, okay, I hope this isn't quick. I hope we're going to get someone here. This is a tease. I hope we're getting something. Maybe just for, I can't remember how long it is. It feels like it's 10 minutes. Of just fantastic action, right?
Teases back and forth.
Obviously, they outdo themselves, you know, in 2 years' time. But that final of the Royal Rumble, for me, is the best closing two guys ever. The back and forth of those two, where you genuinely didn't know
in San Antonio, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I genuinely didn't know who was going to win this. And I thought, okay, well obviously we're getting Undertaker, Batista, or Cena, Shawn Michaels. We ended up getting both anyway. But I didn't know who was going to win this. I was just excited seeing these two great veterans face off against one another. I don't know. Whilst I'm sure if we went by the minutes, I'm sure it probably does rank quite low. But the highs, for me, outweigh the negatives.
Obviously, you guys were saying I wasn't happy with Taker winning, but that was nothing to do with Shawn. I think I just wasn't really enthused with Taker winning in general.
Taker had been pretty damn poor ever since he'd been the dead man at this point. 2004, Kane, Heidenreich, Booker T with Mama Shangri, the Dudleys in the Concrete Crypt, John Heidenreich,
Hassan,
the fucking feud with Randy Orton that never ended and never got good. And that ended in 2006. Great Khali, Mark Henry. He was just involved in bad after bad after bad, and this was kind of the turnaround for Taker. He actually started to really amp it up when they gave him this Rumble win. And again, man, I was sore on Taker at this point.
Yeah, Taker had a bad run of form there, so to speak. I did really enjoy the end to the Rumble. It was nice because there'd been such little interaction with Taker and Shawn prior, since their run at the tail end of 97 and early 98, which I'd really enjoyed at the time, so it was nice to see that interaction again. The Rumble up to that point I didn't think was particularly good. I'm surprised Kieran doesn't love it more, considering Tommy Dreamer is an entrant. But, you know, I thought that would have, you know, skyrocketed it to the top of the list.
I'd erased that from my memory. Thanks very much, Carl.
That's why I'm here, pal. As for the undercard, the tag match was good. Batista Kennedy wasn't. You know, I'm being brief here. Test Lashley was terrible and was just epitomised by the gutless count out finish.
They protected him only to fire him, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, he should never have been brought back.
No.
Not one of Heyman's better ideas. Cena Umaga was far better than I was expecting it to be. I thought that was an enjoyable match. It's not a bad Rumble, but again, the ending of the Rumble, as good as that is, it's not enough to make it a really good show for me.
Okay, yeah, we've got a couple more to get through here, and this is the shank of the evening, as Gene Oakland used to say, so I'll try and be as brief as possible. Shishin KOPF from TVW says, 1994, two winners, twice as good. Bret Hart, woo! Joey Batson says, 1994, it had so many twists and pure entertainment in it from start to finish. Mifune Jackson says, 1994 is a pretty underrated Royal Rumble. It had the Owen turn, Undertaker's death, which I still find very entertaining, and while the ending was anticlimactic, the Rumble itself was also very good that year. So 1994, brief thoughts on this while we have the opportunity, because we talked about Undertaker's low points there previously. This may be the lowest. This or the comeback in the...
The casket, is it? The casket, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the casket match with Yoko.
Yeah, Undertaker, no, horrible. The Rumble itself, bad.
The great Diesel push.
Yeah, that's all right, yeah. One of the better moments for Diesel. The double winners, it's just like, we started the show where I was talking about like how they never redid the 92 Rumble in terms of like the gimmick of the titles on the line, right? This is the other Rumble gimmick that they've never done.
Well, they did, but they did it by accident.
Yeah, they did it by accident, yeah, so that's why I'm not including it, but the double winners, and there's a reason why, because it's crap. It's against what the whole like premise of the show is, which is, you know, one person survives the Rumble, and it just comes across as spineless. It's a thing of like, they want it to be Luger, but they know it's Brett, and that's the thing, and everyone knows it's supposed to be Brett, but they just don't want to admit the fact that they fucked up at SummerSlam 93, so they just decide, I know, this is a great idea, we'll have two winners in the most gutless finish, which doesn't go down well with the crowd, obviously. They boo the shit out of the decision.
No. God bless that crowd in Providence, Rhode Island.
There's a great thing here that you will love, Carl.
They didn't boo the finish so much as they booed Lex Luger every time his arm was raised. Right. The crowd did not enjoy Lex Luger. They loved Bret Hart.
That's the great thing about this show to me, is Vince McMahon having the balls to say, let's see what the fans do here. Let's raise one arm, let's raise the other, let's see who they cheer and boo. And of course, Bret, who'd done the great sell job earlier in the show after Owen Hart kicked his leg out of his leg.
That's my question.
Yeah.
That's the only good moment. That tag match was pretty entertaining, and kick the leg out of the leg.
And Bret comes back, great selling job, great sympathy.
Oh, brilliant.
Awesome stuff. It's like, how can... Yeah, and then they tried to make it equal by having Luger get beaten up by Tenryu and Kabuki backstage, in which Tenryu's pissing himself the whole time because he's never done a vignette in his life. It's just like, it's just hysterical. It's there's no way that the fans are going to choose Luger over Brett on this show with the show-long narrative. Awesome stuff. The Owen turn, notable. I actually did enjoy the Bigelow to Tonka match. Might have been one of the few who did.
No. That was better than it had... than I had any expectations for it. I was surprised. Well, maybe I shouldn't have been, considering it was Tatanka's return from the layoff from the Ludwig Borger attack and him losing his undefeated streak, which apparently had gone 2 years, but he hadn't been with the company 2 years. But I digress. But I was surprised Tatanka went over.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, in clean fashion too. Ludwig Burger, the broken ankle never returned again. I'm sure you shed a tear, Carl.
Pain that never ends.
All right, so we are moving on. We are moving on now to the final candidate, and obviously, if you've been listening to this point, you notice there is one glaring omission. The Royal Rumble 2000 has a hell of a lot of nominations for the best of all time. XL from TPWW says 2000 was pretty good. MSG, Taz debuted in front of his hometown fans, ending Angle's undefeated streak. Hardy's Dudley's in a table match with a Swanton off the balcony. Incredible street fight for the world title that really cemented Triple H as a main event star. Solid rumble match with a controversial ending and Taker smashing his face in. Crowbo from FOW agrees. Ralphie from the UK fan forum also says Royal Rumble 2000 is my favourite Royal Rumble pay-per-view from start to finish. I still watch this back sometimes and always love it as much as the first time. When I get the WWE Network this week, this will be the first event that I watch. Bosco Blick from the UK fan forum says 2000 for me too. I love this set at MSG with the New York yellow taxi suspended above the entranceway. Sets were so much better back then. Lord Peepness from F4W says 2000 is one of the best shows top to bottom ever, period. Craig Atkinson says 2000 as well, and Robert Simmons says the Rumble itself was a hell of a lot of fun with a two cool dance routine in the middle, Taker taking the best faceplant ever, and the ending had everyone talking over who actually won, and then that street fight was just plain awesome. And Mae Young's puppies. Yeah, that kind of speaks for itself. We have discussed this pay-per-view in the past, and the good, the bad, and the ugly of the year 2000, so we don't have to go too in-depth here. This probably does get my vote as the best top-to-bottom. We'll get into our final picks around the table shortly, but this is a top candidate for me, top contender. There is stuff on this show that isn't great. There's the triple threat match with for the IC title with China.
Yeah, but Chase probably loved that.
Well, I did not. The APA in a very short match loses to the New Age Outlaws, which is pretty forgettable. Most people...
Good clothesline.
Great clothesline on Billy Gunn. Much better performance than the one in 1999 from Billy Gunn, I'll say that. But again, Taz, Hardys and Dudleys in an underrated great match with way too many chair shots. The street fight speaks for itself. The Rumble I'm not super high on, to be perfectly honest.
I fucking hated the finish.
Yeah.
Well, Rock's your big star. You're big, and, oh, no.
Well, I don't think they actually meant to do it that way, right? It was Rock fucked it up.
Yeah, and, I think so, yeah.
Rock fucked it up. His feet
so
hit the
floor. So you saw them promote it?
So they went with it.
It's wrestling. You can fucking tell whatever story you
want. I know. Even then, they started the thing where Big Show came out at the end anyway and beat him up and threw him over the top rope after he'd won and done his speech that he's going to WrestleMania. This was a real kind of... I love this pay-per-view for so many reasons, but this really was, you know, the show that, again, Carl, you mentioned how you hate 95 for the implications it has on the rest of the year. 2000 was great because a lot of what they set up this year with Triple H going over so strong, Rock winning the Rumble, setting up the Hardys and the Dudleys as not just underneath tag teams, but, to, you know, four guys that you need to watch. Angle getting choked out because it didn't mean so much for Taz in the end. Kurt, you know, denying that he got beaten and stuff like that. It was great comedy foil for Kurt. A really, really enjoyable show. Nostalgia plays a massive part in this for me because this was the first one that we saw on Channel 4 over in this country.
Yeah.
And everybody was talking about it afterwards, but yeah.
I mean, it's exactly... Yeah, Taz, Kurt... It wasn't like a great match or anything, but it was super Angle.
5 minutes and it was exactly what it needs to be. I love the scene at the end when he's choked him out, everyone's rushing out with a stretcher and Taz is just walking past them in the aisle, not giving a fuck whether he's going to live or die. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Hardy's Duds, again, we know what that's all about. Jericho, China is a joint IC champ.
Yeah, that
fucking atrocious,
awful.
Dude. Fucking atrocious. Jack, Triple H... probably my second favourite match at a Royal Rumble.
Is this behind Rocker's Orient?
No, behind Benoit Angle from
2003, which did not get a nomination.
Yeah. Criminal.
Hate the finish of the Rumble. You know, when Rock needs to be put over strong, and they end up doing the shit later to clarify who's going to WrestleMania. Just shits on the actual Rumble itself. But minor gripes in terms of an enjoyable show. It was super, super fun.
We'd mentioned earlier about the ending to this Rumble and why the idea of going with Kane and doing it the following year wouldn't be a good idea because of what happened here. There was that sort of anticlimactic feel to it, like you say. Big Show came back out and threw the Rock out, which sort of let it with a bit of a flat feeling. But as a top to bottom show, you know, the crowd was hot, in particular for that Taz debut in his hometown, which was fantastic. Kurt's little bit of comedy, there's a little cutaway during the show where he's being looked over by the doctor.
Oh yeah.
And he's just asking, did I win? I was choked out. If I was choked out, choked out is illegal, that means I'm still undefeated.
I don't know about that. Well, I know you got choked unconscious.
It's a real nice little scene that sort of plays into the comedy we'd later see with Angle. As you say, it's It's the polar opposite to 1995 in that it foreshadows, for the most part, all the good stuff that they would do in 2000. The tables match was obviously the parlay into the ladder match at WrestleMania, which is basically a TLC match in all but name. And the street fight... Oh, sorry, I'll go back slightly. The triple threat was dog shit. We'll say that. But you know, not every card can be perfect, and that's the one glaring omission on this card.
What about the swimsuit contest?
I try not to remember that for obvious reasons. You know, even in my heaviest days, I don't think my bitch tits hung that low. The street fight, personally for me, I absolutely love this, because at a time when Foley was clearly past his better days, he'd had that horrible run where he jobbed Val Venus on a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
You know, the testicular claw and all that sort of thing. I was, you know, the tag team with Al Snow. His best days were clearly behind him. So for him to have this moment as a Foley mark, for it to be a really good match.
A return to form
was something that I just absolutely loved. Triple H would then subsequently go on and bury Foley about things that he would do, but it's another story for another time.
Not that you're bitter.
Oh no, not at all.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you, Liam. This is my number one favourite Rumble of all time. As I've probably already stated, it's actually my third favourite pay-per-view of all time. No show is perfect. There are bad points, you know, particularly Mae Young's, you know, breasts that look like, you know, a couple of carrier bags filled with mushy peas. You know,
scrambled eggs on someone's chest.
Oh god, this atrocious. But I'm going to be brief, because I've already gone into this on the 2000 podcast and the best pay-per-view podcast, so I'll just be very brief as to why I love this show. MSG, Taz, tables, China.
Oh god.
Thumbtacks,
barbed wire,
D'Lo Brown, Too Cool Dancing, Tacker Face Plant, Rock winning, sploosh.
He doesn't want a fucking lion tamer on the ladder, but Too Cool Dancing's gravy for him.
That's brilliant. There's a Batman dancing. Who's not entertained by that? Must be a monster.
There is one point here that Tiger Rick mentioned in when he was talking about 1992. He said 2000 is the next best. Obviously, you vote for 92. But he said, kind of a good point here, it has a pretty good rumble with some great spots that is only spoiled by the winner being utterly predictable and the only other contender in the Big Show being a fat pile of shit. Not going to disagree with the latter comment there. The unpredictable point is a good one, because there are really only three contenders, and I think they even pushed on SmackDown the week before. Yeah, it's really between Big Show, Kane, and The Rock, and well, that's all there is to it, really.
Yeah, and the thing is, we're in a period now where the WWF in particular is unpredictable for the sake of being unpredictable, to the point where it can harm a story. You know, they'll do something off kilter, which just defies logic, makes no sense, and doesn't add anything to the enjoyment, doesn't add anything to that particular program. So I've always thought it's not necessarily a bad thing to be predictable. You know, if it makes sense and it's
where,
you know, as long as it's keeping to your long-term vision, providing that the fans are with it, and in which case with The Rock they clearly were, I have no problem with the predictable nature.
Alrighty, so that pretty much sums up every nomination we got in terms of best. There are a few that we didn't get to, and for those, we apologise. We are out of time, but before we actually wrap this up, I want to get everyone's opinions around the table. We've discussed so many Royal Rumbles here. I want to get everybody's picks for the best and the worst in your own personal opinions. I'll open this up to the forum. Whoever wants to jump in first?
I'll open it, because I think the other guys are thinking. As I already said, 2000 is the best, but I also just want to point out, because I'm disappointed that no one's mentioned 2003. Get over the point of the Scott Steiner Triple H. Believe me, I've already gone into that about how shit that was. But we have a Big Show Brock Lesnar match, which is really good, because Brock Lesnar's basically just throwing him around like a sack of potatoes, right? You have a fantastic WWE title match between Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle, which is rated as one of the best matches in Rumble history. And then you have actually an entertaining Raw Rumble itself. You know, there's a lot more stars in this one, a lot more also like new talent coming up, a lot of great moments. You have the nice little kind of receipt of the Undertaker Maven on this one as well, and you know, and just also like a nice dynamic at the very end where you had like Undertaker and Brock, where they were kind of teasing like another fight between them, because they had a pretty good feud the year before, and Brock going over, which would lead into him being a main event at WrestleMania 19, which is a new guy in the main event. I just want to mention that, because that's like my second favourite Rumble. In terms of bad Rumbles, we haven't mentioned it. I absolutely feel drawn to like Carl in terms of like his argument for 95. But for me, the clear worst Royal Rumble of all time is 96. I hate this show. And to describe to you very quickly how much I hate this show, I'd rather watch WrestleMania 6 than this.
Ugh.
Okay? The entire show, from beginning to end, to the lethargic, you know, match between Bret Hart and Undertaker, which should have been better considering the talent involved. Just the Rumble, we've talked about lack of talent in Rumbles. Look at 90 fucking 6, for Christ's sake, where you've got the Headhunters in it. You know, it's just like, it's absolutely awful. There's no great spots in it. And just the entire time I was watching this show, I almost wanted to kill myself. 2000 best, 96. That's the shit the bed, wipe your dick on the curtain, shit ass show.
Kieran, candidates?
2006 is definitely the worst. And then I'll go 92 and 2000 for very different reasons. One, for just the fun nature of the whole card. 92 because it's the way a Rumble should be. The prestige and legacy that no other Rumble has. So even though it's a one-match show, that was the point of the show. So for me, those two tied.
Oh, gutless. Carl, your picks?
Continuing the gutless trend that Kieran has started there, I've got a bit of a difficulty in that, for me, in terms of best Rumble, it's between 2000 and 2001. And I hate to sit on the fence like this, but I really am struggling to pick a definitive winner at the moment, just off the top of my head. In terms of worst, I think I've made it abundantly clear earlier in the podcast that for me, it's 95 hands down. G can mention 96, and I'm not going to say it's a good show. It's pretty dull, but it's not a patch on 95. When you talk about lack of names in a Rumble, at least 96 has. Yeah, Austin's not what he was, but at least he's there. Michaels is there, and he's got more credibility. Bulldog, in my opinion, has got more credibility at that point. Diesel's in it. We may not like him, but it's a name.
That's a great point.
Well, no, but you're talking about star power, and WWF clearly treated him as a star at that point. You know, you've got the debut of Vader. So for me, yeah, 96 isn't
Jake's great. Return. Was
Jake's
fun.
Return, which you know, Jake was well past his best, but the crowd popped for it. In, you know, I'm not going to say 96 is good. But to say it's the worst, I really think you are out on a limb there.
I'm going to say 2000 is the best. I think it's one of the best pay-per-views, period, they've done. Again, partly nostalgia, but the high point of Taz, debut of the Hardys, Street Fight's awesome, Rock winning, finally, again, Rock.
That's the only thing, I mean, one greatest... Rock never got his Rumble win.
That's what I was going to say.
Singles win at WrestleMania, to really to put him... as we expect with the guys from the past, and you know, the kind of the cliches we've been taught, but he really deserved it, and they just fucked him around.
Absolutely, and that's the thing too. It's like the reason I love the fact that the Rock, it was predictable, but god damn it, we wanted Rock to be the guy for so long as Rock fans. But the whole point is that throughout 99, as soon as he turned babyface, which we were clamoring for so long, he was immediately not just number two, but a low number two, wrestling guys like Davey Boy and putting him in dog shit, and wrestling the Outlaws the month before. So yeah, it was the right finish. The show was great, the crowd was hot, nostalgia for me personally, great show. The worst is 2006, I agree with you completely, Kieran. Not a single, to me, redeeming thing on that show. Just rank. Any final thoughts around the table?
Quickly, one name, who's winning this year?
Roman Reigns.
Daniel Bryan for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan. I was trying to think of a funny retort, but it's the modern era and I don't give a shit, so Daniel Bryan, I guess. But saying that if it is Roman Reigns, I'm going to laugh at the boos.
Who's leaving with the belt?
Seth.
I'm going to say Brock.
Oh, always the optimist.
So with that being said, we hope you enjoyed this retrospective. Again, there were comments that we didn't get to in terms of worst, and those from the more recent years. 2014, I think, got a nomination for worst because of, you know, the abominable title match with Cena and Orton and the wrong man winning the Rumble. So again, that's kind of, we didn't
completely forgot about last year.
Yeah, there's a lot that we've forgotten in recent times just because it's very forgettable. We do hope you enjoyed this retrospective. If we didn't get to your feedback this time, we apologise. Check out our previous episodes on iTunes for Kieran O'Rourke.
Au revoir.
For G. John Chase.
I still laugh at Taka's face plant. Does that make me a bad person?
And for Carl Jones.
I think I need a Valium.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here.